Why don't you just go on Pal Talk when you get home?
I do a lot. I do a lot of the time. I do.
You know, do you look forward to it?
Do I look forward to Pal Talk?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I didn't used to. I used to think it was stupid and it annoyed
me.
Are
we being serious here?
Yeah.
I'm going to throw it back. Here on BestinShow.com, here on Heroes Talk, the place to be and the thing you do with your ears. A couple weeks back, I talked about certain things that are things that you've discovered and made yours, and how you get some sort of jealousy or anger if someone else takes them. Keith brings up Pal Talk. Keith, Pal Talk was mine. You took Pal Talk away from me. You are now the Pal Talk cowboy that's on 24/7 because of my job. I am never on Pal Talk nearly as much as I used to be. And like I come into the Pal Talk, into the Heroes Talk, and where you guys should be. You go over to Pal Talk, the nice fancy gold room. You go to TV/radio, click on Heroes Talk Radio. Go in there, I'd say, maybe not 24/7, 22/7. You go in there, Keith is in there holding court. No matter what time of day it is, this is his thing. I tried to turn him onto it forever. He thwarted. Now he's the Pal Talk cowboy.
I love his Pal Talk cowboy.
But just so you know, a girl, Barbara, is in the Heroes Talk chat room right now talking about how she's talking and she's, hey, yay, Keith on Pal Talk. She loves it. Everyone loves Keith on Pal Talk. You're holding court.
Everyone loves Keith on Pal Talk is my sitcom.
Keith? Pal Talk was mine.
I was feeling insecure.
Keith, Pal Talk was mine.
I was shivering inside.
Everyone loves Keith on Pal Talk.
I was shivering inside.
Keith was mine.
I didn't mean to hurt you.
Keith was mine.
Music in speech. A grocer making change.
The man, he didn't die on the street. He was a storekeeper like me, and the two young fellows went and hauled him up, and they killed him. They shot him.
Yeah.
He died. Before he died, he says, I want to tell you, he says, before I die, he says, was white boys kill me, not colored fellows. You know what I mean? That the man was a conscientious man, that he says they might blame on the colored people. That was the object. He was a Jewish man. My milkman told me.
Mm-hmm.
See? So that was the object, because every little thing happens, you know, they blame on colors. You see, I see them, because this son of a... or whatever they... I don't care. I mean, my own kind is just as bad. My old child will be a thief. He's just as bad as the next one. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's a white, color, black, whatever it is. Or, I mean... 3, 6, 16, 19, 5, 9, 11, 15, 17, 179.
Is that right? Do you want to hear me, Pig? Does that turn you on? Look. I thought it might. Stand between me while I sit on the loo. Do you like it coming out? Can you hear that lovely little tinkle? Oh, darling, while I wait, please put your tongue there. Let me wait. What does that feel like? Oh, does that feel gorgeous? I've never done that before. That nearly makes me come doing it. Now stand up. Can you? Oh, I want you to pee down my boobs. Right, so it runs down my body, onto my clit, and into the loo.
Welcome!
What's up, everybody? It's Best in Show. You know how we roll. You know how we do. We get thick and nasty and touchy. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I got a mood on. I got my mood on after hearing that sexy talk. I wish I could express to you how much what I'm saying is an act, how much of it is a joke.
Zadupa. Hochoka.
See, that's me speaking Chinese because it's honestly the most beautiful time of the year. It's the Olympics based in China, and it gets me very excited. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Best in Show, bestinshowradio.com, here on Heroes Talk. That's the thing you do with your ears and the place to be. My name is Chris. I will not be one of your hosts this morning. I'm just introing the show, and as I get ready to walk away with a magical day planned ahead of me, the guy who will be your host for the morning is our buddy Keith.
That's right. No, actually, I just got called away.
Oh, good, good.
I have
good.
To go shopping.
Good. Hanging out, as per usual, is our buddy Brian.
That's me.
And steering this amazing ship is our buddy Rob Giggs. As I was just saying, after now 2.5 years of doing a fine internet radio program on Sundays, saying, you know what? Even when I'm on call, I never get called out. I never get called out. I always find a way to not have to go to work. I'm going to work, folks. I'm only here for a couple of minutes just to get you guys started and see you off and bid you a fond adieu. I hope everything works well. What's up?
What happened? Did somebody trip over a wire or something?
It's going to wind up proving out to be something like that. I was so excited to talk about the Olympics. I was so excited to go on about Olympic fever, my new favorite thing. But you guys are going to have to just talk about the Olympics without me. How long is the Olympics, by the way?
4 years. It's every 4 years.
No, not when. How often is it? Is it next week? Could I still have Olympic fever? Will the Olympics be far over by next week?
I believe it's two weeks, but I'm not 100% sure.
All right, so next week I am going to be so into the Olympics. I'm going to be able to talk about it. Right now, China, you know, my favorite country.
They're winning?
Oh, they're rocking. They got a bunch of medals or something. It's great.
I didn't know China was back and pro wrestling was part of the Olympics.
Oh, dude, it's the greatest thing in the world. It's the greatest thing in the world. I'm very excited about it. But yeah, I'm thrilled to be alive. I'm thrilled to be going to work, and I
dude, what happened to Verizon being on strike?
You know,
seriously,
yeah, this has nothing to do with Verizon, but yeah it's this is really gonna stink on
that's the problem. They are on strike.
If you guys want to call the show, as I'm probably going to, you can call at 877-744-6405. If you want to check out any of the various chat rooms, you should go over to Pal Talk, go to TV Radio, click on Heroes Talk Radio, go over to Best in Show, go over to HeroesTalk.com, click on video. You can also go to BestinShowRadio.com, look at all the fancy stuff, and I don't know, enjoy a magical show. I mean, it's a real sad time. I guess more than anything else, I'll be honest, I've been lying to you guys. I don't actually have to go to work. I'm actually going to just go into the other room to mourn the loss of Bernie Mac. So I'm not actually going to be here for the program today, thinking very sadly about the whole thing. It does, in all honesty, it does bring something to mind, thinking about the whole thing of someone who you don't expect to die dying like that, a dude who's so young, and it just brings you to the whole heaviness of what is life and what is death. So why don't you guys spend the next 3 hours talking about what life is all about, and I'll be listening in my car phone.
What is life going to be about without the daddy of the Mac?
I have to say,
daddy,
and I don't want to come off like an idiot now, like a mean jerk, but I have to say that
he's the king of comedy.
I mean, it's upsetting. I anytime I hear anyone died, it's upsetting, especially when somebody dies young like he did. But as Rumpelfoskin said, dude, he was 50, he was old.
Yeah, I think I got 2 years left before.
Look, Bernie Mac was... I never watched his show. I never saw his stand-up act. Apparently, he was very funny. I liked him in Friday, or Next Friday, whichever it was, where he was the pot-smoking preacher. And it's sad just because a guy died. But as far as, like, a hero or an idol died, I wasn't a big Bernie Mac fan. So, you know, on that end, it's not, like, you know, that big of a deal. But it's again, like I said, it's sad to hear that somebody died at that age, but I don't know. You guys, Brian, you a big Bernie Mac fan?
You know, I've not been a big Bernie Mac fan. I'll be honest with you. I guess that show is supposed to be really good, but I never watched it. I thought his comedy was bad at best. Had a couple of funny little lines here and there, but not to be too corny. I really enjoy them in Ocean's 11, 12, and 13.
I didn't see any of those, but I did. I only found out yesterday that he was actually in those movies. But yeah, I don't know. It's sad. See, the strange thing to me is apparently he was getting ready to leave the hospital or something. Or like they were about to release him or something, and then all of a sudden he died. I don't really know 100%.
Wasn't it like he had pneumonia, I guess, is what he was actually treated for or suffered, which is usually code for different things. But
AIDS or something.
Yeah,
like
but
that.
I guess he had like a long term. He was a long term battle with some sort of disease, and I don't remember what the name of it is, but it's something that sounds funny.
According to a friend Vito, who might be joining us later. It's a little secret. I love you, Chris. He was barely in Ocean's 12 because apparently. He got sick during filming, so he's been sick a long time. That means wait, Ocean's 12, because wasn't Ocean's 13 actually out already? So wouldn't Ocean's 12 have been filmed like 4 years ago or something?
Jeez, maybe two or three. Ocean's 13 came out. It was earlier this year or late last year. So yeah,
oh.
But no, I mean he wouldn't have been by long term disease. I guess like he's been suffering with this for a decade or so. I mean, I'm pulling that out of the air, but he's been treated with this forever, and it just, you know, this was the end of the cycle, if you will.
They're not really releasing many details yet either, so I guess that's also a part of the problem. But it's oddly enough, yesterday I found this out at work, and it started this conversation among my coworkers talking about when people died, and one of them mentioned how when somebody died, and you know what, I can't remember who it is, but when somebody died, how she cried. And this other girl turns to me and says, if you cry because a celebrity died, you have some serious issues. And that makes that brings up this question to me, like, could you imagine dying because, I mean, could you imagine crying because a celebrity died? Like, was there any celebrity that you might, like, cry because they passed away?
Jeez, I'm trying to remember of the last time that I felt bad that someone famous died. I really don't think I'd cry, but I'll be quite honest with you, and I shouldn't have. I felt bad for it, about it, but I felt...
I can't wait to hear who it is that you shouldn't have. I should not have felt bad that this person died.
I shouldn't have. I really should.
When Hitler died, I felt bad, and I'm very broken up about that.
My criticism is of that, and yes, people crying over Heath Ledger's death, who've never even met him, just like wild, you know, girls out in the street.
Exactly.
Up to like little, you know, hipsters out in Brooklyn, tearing up at the fact that Heath Ledger... I just... Stop it. It's
Mary
ridiculous.
Kate Olsen, because she's going to go to jail.
Even if you happen to be like a fan of this person's work or whatever, I mean, it's pretty obnoxious to actually feel an emotional connection enough to cry at the person's death. To me, it's like a cry. It's a cry for help.
Chris, we're doing a show in here. Could you stop interrupting us?
Sorry.
To me, it's a cry for help. The guys, you're coming out and crying and showing that, yeah, you have feelings too. Shut up. I mean, it's not your brother. It's not your friend.
It's not somebody you've ever even met three times and developed an attachness to. You know, like, an attachness. And you know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of when Kurt Cobain died. Because when Kurt Cobain died, I think there was the most incredible amount of melodrama and the most incredible amount of overreaction ever. And Vanessa in the chat room is telling us that she cried when John Lennon died, but she was 10. You know what? I was probably 6 when John Lennon died, and I remember that even though I was so young, I had just become a big Beatles fan, and I remember... I don't think I cried, though. I definitely didn't cry. I don't think I was even old enough to like kind of appreciate what happened. But, yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know. But you were a 10-year-old girl. I guess it's okay to cry, be a 10-year-old girl and cry when John Lennon died. But, like, the Kurt Cobain thing, I mean, you see these thousands and thousands of people here, and for some reason, more so in England, it seemed like, where I guess he was huge. Like, people just crying, and I don't know, it's, you could be upset when someone died, but to be actually brought to tears, to have that kind of emotion struck in you because a celebrity died, I just don't get it. I don't see it.
It bothers me when I see that happen, quite honestly.
Because I don't think it's real. I honestly don't think it's real. I guess some of them it's real, but I mean...
It definitely, the first thing that pops in my head is it's affected. Someone's doing it to make themselves look more... humane, I guess, and it makes from my perspective, it makes them look like a tiny little girl, and it bothers me. That said, when Norman Mailer passed away, I was reading two of his books, and they were two particularly sort of insightful, crawling into his head, and it sort of took me by surprise, even though he was like 120, and I felt like a little bit of weird kind of, wow, it's not quite a friend has died, but someone who, I mean, I'm reading the words of the person, the thoughts are on the page, and I just happened to be reading at the time when he died, and it kind of took me back a little. Now, I'm not going to bawl about it. I'm not going to, like, sit in the corner and cry. I'm not going to, you know, write a blog or have a barbecue about it, but it's just, you know, I guess I can understand it, but come on. Hey, really?
Hey, guys, this is Rob Gates, the producer. I have a question for you. What about, do you feel bad about the children? Like, if they had children? See, that's where I necessarily don't feel bad about the person who died, the celebrity, but I may feel bad about the family or children, you know, that they have left behind.
I do. And you know what? I feel bad for the children, and I also feel bad for the person. Like, I do feel bad when someone dies, because, and I mean, and maybe it's just me, but when I hear that anyone dies, for some reason, I always just get this slight feeling like, oh, that's sad, you know, like, no matter who it is. But I don't, there's feeling bad, and then there's, you know, being driven to that kind of emotion where you're crying. Like, because, you know what, think of all the things you go through in your life that you don't cry about. Think of all the times you're on the verge of tears. To be brought to tears because a celebrity died, it's just very odd to me.
Well, you know what's the worst thing about it is I'm not going to cry because, you know, of the celebrity that dies, but I'll cry about the character that he plays when he's up on screen and it dies. That's how gay that I am.
What movies have you cried at recently?
E.T. I was tearing up when E.T. the little... Not even... I mean, that's not even an
animal.
Actor. That's a character. That's not even an animal. It's an a figment of someone's imagination, and it passed away. And it didn't really die, by the way. So, you know, everyone.
Oh, he's coming back.
Okay. Yeah.
He was Alf, right? Actually.
Spoiler alert. I didn't mean to ruin that movie for you, but.
You know what? I teared up yesterday at a TV commercial. There's this commercial. There's a commercial that it's not a Hallmark commercial. Don't get ready to hit me. There's a television commercial for like the ASPCA or something, and they play this ridiculously depressing Sarah McLachlan song, and they're showing all these animals that have been abused, and they have like burns on them, and like there's a dog with one eye, and it's like these tiny poor little caged things just staring all sad, and my eyes definitely got wet. Between that and the song yesterday, my eyes got wet.
Were you crying at the fact that... No, these were real pictures.
These are real pictures of real animals, yeah.
And they were just in the cage?
They were in the cage, all beat up and bruised, looking all sad, like asking me to take them home.
But it was the animals that you were...
I'm crying right now, thinking of it, honestly.
It was the animals that you were crying about, not the people or children's reaction to it.
Take me home. Please, exactly. Rescue me.
No, it was the actual animals that I was crying. And I mean, I wasn't crying, but like I said, I got teary-eyed. And I look, a couple weeks ago, I admitted getting teary-eyed listening to Love, to the band Love, and thinking of the fact that... All right, it was kind of thinking of the fact that it wasn't so much like getting teary-eyed because Arthur Lee died. That was part of it. But it was more... I guess it was more... I don't know. I guess there was kind of a lot of things going on with me at the time, too. And plus, the song is really, really sad. And he's singing about how everything's going to die. So, you know, it's just like sometimes you get... You know, everything hits you at once and you kind of tear up. But to be brought to hear the news, hey, so-and-so died, oh my God, and start crying, it's just... It's strange to me.
No, I think the... When I feel emotions while watching movies or film or something speaks to sort of the power of art or the power of film in particular to be able to generate emotions, because, you know, that news hits you along with like a slow motion close up scene and like the violins that are streaming in the background and all.
Oh, I hate you so much right now.
Which is why you tear up at this, because you can listen to that. This is a sad song. Little commercials, I mean, and you've got images of the little crying dogs. I guarantee it's in slow motion, and it's one of them shaking their head.
It's super slow motion, and they're just not even shaking their head. They're just kind of staring at you, like, why did you let this happen to me?
Right. Whereas if you actually saw any of these dogs in the street, you'd probably like, ew, you'd step away from them, or and laugh at it.
I get sad when I see stray animals in the street. I do. I feel way sadder for animals than I do for people.
I'm suggesting it's the power of manipulation of propaganda and art and marketing and film. That's maybe jerk. Maybe the reason why you don't care if Heath Ledger dies, but you know when his lover dies on Brokeback Mountain, you start shedding a tear is because like you're drinking the Kool-Aid. That's what I'm saying.
So what? Right. More than anything else, then, is the fact that like he—it's not that he so much cares that Arthur Lee is gone. It's the way that they put together the packaging of Forever Changes. Like the record cover itself is what did it for him.
Yes, that's what I mean. Well, maybe okay. That's a different example because, I mean, Keith has in a certain way fallen in love with his person's art. So I guess he's got that you know as a it's sort of part of his perspective, but then that would justify the geeks crying about Heath Ledger's death as well. So I don't know.
Wait, you're gonna compare Heath Ledger's art in the fact that you I mean like Heath Ledger's art generally is the fact that he did a good job of even maybe even only a moderately good job of reenacting someone else. I don't want to downplay the importance of actors. I don't consider that the same type of art. It's like I don't consider that creating the same type of art. I guess you know. Thing to me isn't. It's not on par. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to downplay the whole. It's the most important thing that ever happened in the history of the world. He's an actor.
Yeah,
it's art. He's not creating in my mind. I don't think.
Well, I mean,
in my mind.
Some people would disagree with that. I mean, I'm not a big fan of just scripted actors reading stuff, but I don't know if you've ever tried it before. It's actually, there's an art behind it. It's not an easy thing to do. I mean, clearly you haven't seen A Knight's Tale. He was at the top of his
game. Obviously. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting that there's nothing artistic in it, but it's not creating art the same way. You know, it's not like a purely... as an actor, what you're creating is an interpretation of someone else's stuff.
Or
the art, you're really just making, like, you're taking something from nothing and doing it. I guess the angles is like, well, you didn't fabricate the guitar that you're doing it from, or you didn't put the piano together for it. But I feel like it's not on the level of art. And again, I'm not. I don't want to take you guys away from,
what,
you know, from...
Wait a second, wait, I had a response to that. What if you're improvisational? What if you're actually making up the words and the dialogue and stuff that's happening on the screen or in the theater?
That, to me, is a more creative art than a dude who reads from the script.
Now, that said, let's stretch it. What happens when someone who reads the script and throws a couple lines in here or there? And then what's the slippery slope difference between that and facial gestures and dramatic pauses, etc.?
Yeah, I don't think necessarily the fact that the person didn't create their own art necessarily, you know, like if somebody has an effect on you, if somebody has that emotional of effect on you, it's not going to be I'm a lot at a loss for words. It's not going to make much sense. It's not going to be like a normal effect. You know, emotions are wild and crazy. Something having an emotional effect on you, you know, isn't necessarily because, I don't know, that they created their own art. But Chris, is there anyone that you could any celebrity that you could find yourself crying at when they died?
Oh, well, not to be the talk radio hack, but Ron Bennington. My life will be destroyed the day that Ron Bennington is gone.
Now, is that because he won't be on the air anymore, or just because you'll be broken up and sad about the fact that he died?
Good point. Don't get me wrong, I'll be saddened at his death no matter what, but I think part of that is the fact that it would impact me that I couldn't anymore. I would have a genuine sadness, though, a feeling, I would feel a loss, you know, but it's just lost hasn't. It might just be a loss of this dude that I listen to, you know, 3 hours every day. You know,
I've always said that I would, that I think I would, I don't know, if David Bowie died, I might cry. I don't know. I couldn't see it happening, but I don't think I would cry, though. I definitely wouldn't cry. But I would, I'd cry. No, I definitely wouldn't cry, but I could see myself maybe getting very upset, but I don't know if it's more of the fact that the guy died and I have so much respect for everything he's done, or just the fact that in the back of my head, I'm such a big fan of his that I'm always waiting for the next thing he's going to do, and then knowing that that's over now and he's not going to do anything anymore. Because I got to admit, I was legitimately upset when he had his heart surgery and I thought he was going to die.
I think that's exactly what it is. I think it's exactly how it's affecting you. The fact that you're not going to be able to get your Bowie fixed if he's dead, I think it's probably what it is. And that's not to say that you don't have a genuine sense of caring for the dude, because I'm sure you do. And I'm sure that there's but the thing is, all you really can know about the dude and all you can really care about from the dude is his art that you consume. Because it's that's really your relationship with him is based on being a fan of his art.
And by the way, joining us on the Hottest of All Blue Teeth is our my co-host Chris.
Who that was Chris. I didn't know that.
You thought that was just some guy.
I didn't mean to ask you guys about that. Does it sound okay? Does it sound terrible? Or
it doesn't sound great, but if you weren't a co-host, we'd probably have kicked you off already. But you know, for the sake of who you are, we'll let it slide. We'll kiss your ass a little bit, buddy.
I have no problem dropping off if I sound terrible to you guys. So
no, it's not. We can hear you. We can hear you clearly.
Well, let me say this. I don't think I'd be too happy about the demise of David Bowie. I'm not a huge fan of his, but I like his music. I just don't have a lot of his records. I think he's a genius. I don't think I'd cry. I don't think I would well up or get too terribly emotional if he died. But my heartstrings were tugged when I was watching The Man Who Fell to Earth a little bit, his character in there at the end when we were all taking advantage of him. And
Brian, the question for you isn't David Bowie. David Bowie is obviously the question for Keith. The question for you is, do you cry when David Lynch died?
No, I probably wouldn't. I probably wouldn't. I mean, I'd feel bad about it. I guess I would miss him I think it would be a lesser place without him on here to make movies and to look forward to not seeing again. But no, I don't think I'd ball up. I don't think I'd cry at the. I don't think I'd feel emotional by his passing. No.
Okay. What about Kid Koala?
even less of a chance of me feeling emotional about something like that. I'm trying to dig through my little memory recesses right now and pick up someone that would affect me. It would have to be someone who I met or someone who I knew or someone who would clearly have an effect on my friends or my family around me.
And for the record, I could, as much as I love David Bowie, I wouldn't be brought to tears when he died because I've never met him and I don't have a personal emotional connection to him. But Canadian Page brings up an interesting point. Are you ever happy when someone dies? I don't think so. I've never, unless some guy that tortured a bunch of people was executed, I might be happy then. But I don't think.
Did you dance a jig when Sodom was killed? Because that's a dude who tortured a bunch of people. I don't think that probably elicited nearly any sort of big response.
The Pope. Because he was involved with lots of torture.
You know what? Honestly, and this is probably the torpedo that's going to sink our radio show. And I know you always call me 100 Limbaugh, Chris, or whatever you used to call me. But I actually felt a little sorry for Saddam Hussein when he got killed.
Wow.
I know he's a monster. I know he's a monster. I know he deserved it. But, for some reason, it was just I don't know. I just looked at him and I was like, it's just kind of sad watching this poor dude. I don't know. Sorry.
That's pretty shocking to me. That is the shocking moment.
Shocking.
So, he was just following orders. They happen to be his own.
No, he deserved it. He definitely deserved it.
He was just following orders that he gave.
It's kind of like on Seinfeld when the guy that owns the store tells him, hey, store policy. hey, this is my country's rules. I have to follow it.
Okay, who was that the televangelist? Was it Falwell who just passed away maybe a year ago, 6 months ago or something like that?
I don't remember.
Get Falwell and Swaggart confused. I know one of them died. I don't know which one.
It was Billy Graham, the wrestler, actually.
It's a year ago or something. And he was just, he was a prick, basically, as it comes right down to it. But I was surprised when that happened how many people were just sort of dancing on his grave. I'm not going to come to his defense.
The, uh, maybe if you were to watch the People versus Larry Flint, maybe you'd feel differently about it.
I did watch that, and I was that was funny. But it was just like when he went, the internet was alive with people saying, you know, horrible things about him and watching him, and they were just people were very ecstatic about his passing. And I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'm not a fan
of it. The hills are alive with the death of Falwell.
And our buddy Elvis expert, who would obviously know, brings up an interesting point. The impact of Elvis dying. Now, I was too young for that, but I am sure that that may have brought on the most tears of anyone. You know, like, I mean...
He's not dead yet.
You totally just got me. You totally just got me. About, I'd say, 1979, 80-ish, somewhere around there. Elvis had been dead. When did Elvis die? 77, 78, something like that?
I'm going to wait for Elvis expert to answer that when did Elvis die question. And then I'll let you know. But yeah, go ahead.
He's still hanging around.
It was.
August 16th, 1977.
Okay, so in like 78, 79, I'm sitting at my grandmother's table for a Sunday lunch, actually Sunday dinner at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And so for some reason, I start singing Blue Suede Shoes at table, you know, because I was not quite an Elvis expert, but I was a dude that was obsessed with Elvis and really dug him. And as I'm singing it, I'm doing it over and over, my uncle looks at me like, will you stop singing it? The guy's dead already. And I didn't know that Elvis was dead.
Know that? I thought you were doing it as intentionally.
I was like five. I was 5 or 6 years old.
You must have been an arrogant little 5-year-old jerk, though.
I'm sure I was, but no, I had no idea. I was like 5, 6 years old, but you know, like I didn't know. I guess my family didn't choose to explain death to me, or a celebrity death at the very least.
Wait, but your uncle was just waiting for the day that Elvis died, so he would stop hearing songs, and then you singing it just prolonged it. Like that's what that reaction means to me. He's dead already. Stop it.
I think I was being an annoying little kid that I just kept singing. Like, I don't even think I was singing the whole song. I think I just kept doing the 1 for the money, 2 for the show.
Wow.
And over and over again at the table, like a little douchebag, you know. And so it was annoying. And so he says it to me, and when I realized, wait, he's dead, that was the last time that I think I cried for a celebrity dying. I started crying 2 years to the fact, but I was sitting at my grandmother's table crying like a little homo about the fact that Elvis would die. And I don't know why I think homos are any different than heterosexuals, but yeah.
The day that Kurt Cobain died, I rushed home from work and played like a bunch of Nirvana records just because I was like, hey, you know, they're doing it on the radio. What the hell? And my roommate at the time was pissed, was livid that I was doing this because I had no respect for the dead. I was like, what? I'm listening to his music. What's going on with you?
That's even weirder than you playing Kurt Cobain songs because he died is somebody getting mad about it because it's disrespectful.
Yeah.
That's just insane.
I don't know if you guys are aware of the fact that I'm Kurt Cobain with a rope chain. But the whole Kurt Cobain thing, if you remember, like, the 6 months before he died, there was a whole, like, he almost killed himself once in, like, Italy, like, right?
Yeah, it was a mess. Yeah, there was all kinds of stuff going on.
Yeah, didn't we hear he was dead and he really wasn't for, like, a while? But, like, for a couple days, there was a report that he died and then all of a sudden.
It wasn't a couple days. It wasn't a couple days, but I think that's what I'm talking about. The whole thing, and he was in Rome, and I think he attempted suicide, and it was initially reported that he committed suicide, according to, like, MTV News by, I can't remember the guy's name.
Fab Five Freddy?
what was that host's name? Kurt, his name was Kurt, too.
Kurt Loder.
Kurt Loder said that it seems that he committed suicide, and I remember thinking, like, oh, man, whatever, who cares? And then when we found out that he didn't kill himself, I was like, ah, man, I'm in the way. I wish he would kill himself,
You know what? I have to actually say this, though. When they reported that Dave Gahan of Depeche Mode died, I didn't cry, but I was really, really upset, and I kept thinking, like, it was just, like, it was bothering me. I was thinking about it nonstop, and then they said, oh, he didn't actually die. He just, like, OD'd and something. But again, that goes back to, yeah.
That's exactly what you're saying. You were bringing up David Bowie before. I think in the past when we've ranked the importance of people to you, I think you've always ranked Depeche Mode at the 10 and David Bowie at the 9, or were they both 10?
No, David Bowie is the 10, Depeche Mode is like the 8, you know, like, but they're close.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was wondering if like Martin Gore, you know, or Dave Donoff being gone would if that could get you to squirt a few out.
I wouldn't cry because I can't be brought to that kind of emotion for someone I don't know, but I would be really upset, and it also goes back to the fact that I know I'm not going to get anything from them anymore, you know, like but dope. I'm Dave Kahn, ain't going to have any dope for me anymore.
There's the whole thing with how you know them. Your intimacy with their art fosters almost a relationship. And I understand with my talk radio obsession, it's a little different because the art that I'm appreciating is just the dude hanging out and talking to you like he's sitting in the room talking with you. So to the point that I'm probably psychotic in the way that I consider, I wouldn't go so far as say that I consider the talk radio guys that I listen to my friends, but that I actually feel like there's a different level of knowing these dudes because their job is about talking to you. So, and in that, David Bowie let you know. He gave you the look into his heart in playing whatever music he's done for you, you know?
You're right. No? And I guess that's basically where how people are brought to tears when somebody dies. So I guess I maybe understand it, but it's just like, again, I think of all the things that would almost bring you to tears that don't. And so comparatively, I just don't see, you know, like crying over, but I've said this over and over now, crying over, you know, there's times when you think, wow, I'm going to cry right now, but you don't, whatever, you know, you're an adult and you stop yourself from crying. So to be brought to tears over, you know, I don't know. It's
see,
just crazy.
We keep coming back to the ones like Kurt Cobain because of what we saw, the images that we saw of the fallout of all their fans and how obnoxious they were the most irritating, from my perspective. These kids gathered up in a park in Seattle, like burning candles to each other and reading poems and Courtney Love on that freaking microphone reading his suicide note. I just wanted to I really just wanted to set fire to that park. Like it was making me angry watching these people.
I don't disagree with you even a little bit. Even to the point that I'm sorry. I know. It's not even that I think. I know that the most important person in music that ever existed, the most brilliant mind ever, was John Lennon, and if I walk through Central Park by Strawberry Fields, I want to smash people sitting there playing their acoustic guitar version of Across the Universe all every day. Like, shut up already. I understand I was great and everything, but like, is this really the best way of celebrating his message by being homos sitting in a park doing this?
Bah. I agree with that.
That's because you're a jealous guy, Chris. I think we've already established that. But anyway, I don't know. Rest in peace, Bernie Mac. That's all I have to say about that.
I guess what it comes down to is if the art of the Kings of Comedy or the Bernie Mac show really got to you, then, you know, more power to you. I'll offer you a Kleenex. I think it's fine if you choose to cry a thousand tears over Bernie Mac. And, hey, you know, good say, you know...
You know,
say goodbye. Say goodbye to romance, I guess, is what I'll say.
The odd thing about Bernie Mac is his sitcom, which I never actually watched.
Hilarious. You're missing out. It's a really, really funny show. Yeah. He's a funny dude.
That's what people keep saying, that show was great. I just never liked his stand-up. It was like he had a couple of standout jokes, and he had to suffer through a lot of garbage to get there. And like I said, that Ocean's 11 stuff was the only thing that I watched that I liked by the guy. But I never saw his show. His show's supposed to be great. Everyone's freaking out about it.
It's really funny. His stand-up, the only standout that I can think of his stand-up is the fact that he refers to one of his kids as the faggot, which I think is hilarious.
Okay, I agree.
That blows my mind that he does that. And then this little faggot comes up in there looking for a cookie. You know, I did that. But for the most part, I wasn't a huge fan of Ted. That show, though, is a funny show. I'm trying to think who turned me on to it. One of our buddies turned me on to it and told me, yeah, you got to watch it. And I watched it, like, you know, like when it was, you know, on at 11 o'clock at night or on some, like, you know, Channel 9 or some sort of syndication late at night thing. I never like watched it when it was, I guess, wasn't it always on in a syndication type thing? Wasn't it all on one of those like secondary?
What do you mean by secondary?
The CW or the WB or something. Like, he was never on a real
the non-networks? The non-networks?
Why they gotta right. be? Why they gotta be fake?
What's with you with your fake ass network? It's I don't know what it is. It was like I said. It's one of it wasn't one of the big three.
It wasn't one of the white big three channels. Is that what you're saying?
But
yes, that's exactly where I'm going. You can keep digging for the racist joke. It'll come out eventually. Keep going. It just wasn't one of the majors. So I don't know if what I was watching was when it was on in syndication, as I would consider it, or if being on prime time on one of those channels is really kind of like syndication, essentially.
Well, the odd thing about those networks is those are like more of a 90s thing. But see, when it comes to sitcoms, I'm more of like an 80s guy. You know, like. And lately, a lot of times, I find myself feeling like I am in an 80s sitcom. And that brings me to my next topic. My life in an 80s sitcom. You guys want to dance a little with me or something? Or so every once in a while, I Chris, can you hear this?
Oh, it sounds really fantastic. It sounds with tornado.
All right, so let's kill the theme music. But a couple times this week, I realized that my life is like a sitcom, and these things, and let me give you a perfect example of what I'm talking about. There's two. The first one, I'm in Starbucks, and I'm buying coffee, and I take the money. And now, I don't know about you guys, but when you guys when you tip in like a Starbucks or something, do you just immediately take the money and throw it in? Do you wait till you get the change, or do you wait to make sure the person sees you put the money into the tip box? Because that's exactly what I do.
All right, pal.
Hey, these shiny quarters that you thought I was taking for myself. Hold on, see yourself. I want you to know you're dealing with a high roller here.
I don't do it because I want to look like a big shot. I do it because it's a win or lose situation. And what I mean by that is it's kind of all or nothing. Either they're going to see you and say, hey, what a good guy. He's putting a dollar in our thing. Or they're going to not see you do it and say, wow, what a jerk. He doesn't care about the fact that I'm working and can't even be bothered tipping me. You know, there's no middle ground there. So rather than look like the jerk, especially if I'm giving up my money, I at least want them to know I'm not a jerk. So I'll kind of wait. So the other day I'm in Starbucks, and I kind of waited for the girl to hand me back single so I could take one and put it into the tip box so she'll know I'm not a jerk. And she hands it back to me and turns her head as I'm putting it in. And then I swear to you, kind of looks back at me kind of like, what a jerk, you didn't put any money in. It happened on Seinfeld. George Costanza in the Italian restaurant, in the pizzeria. The guy doesn't see him put his tip in the tip jar, so then he kind of waits for the guy, and the guy turns around, so he sticks his hand to get it back, and then the guy starts yelling at him like he's trying to steal his money or something. But that's basically what I felt like, and I said, I can't even believe it. I just waited, and I was like, now I feel like an idiot. I should have just taken the dollar, thrown it in, and not cared.
All right. Okay, first of all, I'm not going to Starbucks because I'm raging against the machine. So you'll never see me spend a nickel on that.
Obviously, joint. They don't have any commercials on the CW or the UPN. So,
secondly, I'm never tipping anyone who's serving me coffee. I don't care if it's a fancy coffee or if it's a regular coffee that a human like me is going to get. You're giving me coffee, I'm paying for it, and that's it. I'm already paying a ridiculous amount of. I'm paying $1.50 for this 5 cents of coffee. No, you're not getting a tip. Sorry.
I kind of understand that because it's not like you're going to tip you're not going to tip the cashier at the supermarket either when things like that happen. But I do know that that pieces of change are, if someone's trying to hand change back to me, they might as well be trying to hand back small little pieces of like lava.
You fear you
hole through my hand. I don't want it. Like no, keep that. I can't deal with that.
You fear change.
Why do you want change in your pockets? You're gonna walk around with big guys. Then you're gonna jingle like you're 5 years old when you're walking around. No, I don't want change.
I'm the same way, except I keep quarters. I don't know if how the rest of you roll, but I go to a laundromat, and at the end of the week, I need quarters to do this. I save quarters.
I take a bus.
Well, they have those Metro cards now. You should try them out. Fancy stuff.
Yeah, but you know what? I live in Staten Island. There's no local train stations to run down to and just buy a Metro card conveniently. I have to find the one deli in a 6 mile radius that happens to sell Metro cards.
You know, EQ in the Heroes Talk chat room brings it out he's speaking the truth. Tipping with change is worse than not tipping at all. Turning back the change, Chris, and saying no, I can't handle that. You take it. I don't know if you think you're being nice, but you're basically saying, I can't touch that garbage, you deal with it.
Yeah. Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm not doing it to be nice. I'm doing it saying, hey, you know what? I don't want that. I don't want that. I guess it'd be the equivalent of not wanting to eat food and being like, I can't have it.
It would be like throwing your garbage in their tip jar, kind of. I mean, pretty much, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, put my garbage, enough of garbage to get them a nice, a nice little thing out of a bubble plastic thing in a machine, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, they could use the napkin that you put in there. It has a little bit of coffee on it, but, you know, they could use it for a Kleenex or something.
Well, let me ask you guys this. What do you always tip? Like, if there's a tip jar, do you always tip? Because this, like, if somebody's not preparing something for me, I won't tip as much. But, like, if I go into a store and I buy Red Bull and it's $2.75 and there's a tip jar, I'll normally take the other quarter and just throw it in because it's kind of like, you know, at that point, I can kind of be insulting with the tip because they shouldn't be getting a tip anyway, you know? Like, but it's just I hand somebody something and I make a money exchange. It's not that big of a deal. I'm not asking them to do anything. But will you do that or will you keep the quarter if
The first place my money goes, Keith, is in the take a penny, leave a penny. If I ever have change, all of it that isn't a quarter gets dumped in the take a penny, leave a penny.
Chris?
Well, the take a penny, leave a penny, you're disregarding the rule of it. It's a penny. But the places where you should be tipping, the places where I'm dropping the change, rather, is places where I wouldn't traditionally tip anyway. So to me, it's kind of like, all right, well, I mean, like, giving you something at least, which I guess supposedly is an insult, I guess. But I'm not doing it like I'm not going out to dinner and throwing, you know, believing a roll of nickels sitting on the table for that. It's something like, you know, a retail shop where I generally wouldn't be tipping if not for the fact that they had this stupid thing out there that says, you know, tips are appreciated. I mean, another thing, I don't take change even if they don't have one of those. I try not to take change. As much as possible, I don't particularly care for having change in my pocket.
Well, like I said, I'm keeping change from a coffee transaction. You know, if there's a take a penny, leave a penny thing, I'll dump everything that's not a corner in there, but the rest of it's going in my pocket, so that the next take a penny, leave a penny little dish I get gets loaded up as well. Or I'm tossing it in my little change dish at home. You know, that's.
Is there any traditionally tipped profession that you refuse to tip, either of you?
That we refuse to tip?
Yeah, like, is there somebody that normally gets tipped that you just won't? Like, I know a lot
as
of people would tip.
Yeah, as a rule, I can't think of any.
Yeah, I pretty much kind of over-tip regularly. I guess the closest thing I have is the coffee thing. But here's the thing. If you go to Katz's, which is a world-famous deli in the Lower East Side of the East Village of New York City. It's delicious. They do, like, corned beef and pastrami and all this stuff, and they serve it in large amounts. And you go up and be served by a person who slices off the meat for you. And while you're doing that, they'll give you, like, a little dish of sample. You know, like, hey, I'm making your sandwich for you. Here's a little kind of, you know, little taste of some hot cured beef for you, and it's delicious. And right next to it, they have a tip jar. So usually they're kind of giving you extra free stuff as they're cutting it, and you should be compensating. It's sort of like an unspoken transaction.
And you will tip there, or you won't?
Oh, yeah, I tip. Oh, okay. I tip right up front, and I tip generously. But I know that it's like I'm not getting anything on the comeback. Like, I'm not going up for a second helping, so him seeing me tip doesn't really matter. I'm just kind of doing him a favor for hooking me up with this extra free stuff. At a bar, when I know I'm going to be up there 20 times, I'm tipping through the nose, and I'm making sure that they see it. Unlike you, if they're not seeing me doing it, I'm putting it in a place that is obvious to them that, oh, this is the guy who just left. I tucked it under his empty glass or something.
Like,
You have a Sharpie marker in your pocket, and on the that you leave there, it says Brian Cunning was here, you know?
And you know what? Elvis Expert in the chat room saying that where he is, they have legal brothels, and the girls get tips from their tricks that have already paid to have sex with them.
Shut up.
And that kind of brings me to another interesting thing, not to compare tattooing to prostitution, but you get a tattoo, you're paying a lot of money for it, but don't you always throw in a nice extra tip to the artist as well?
You got to tip a tattoo guy?
Oh, hell yeah, you should. Oh. I think if he owns the place, you should throw him. I got a tattoo, my world-famous Homer Simpson tattoo here. I got from this guy that owned the place, and whatever it cost, I gave him an extra $40 on top of it, just, you know, for his work. So I think things like that, I think, you know, especially what Elvis Expert's talking about, those girls probably, you know, I think they if anyone's ever earned a tip, I mean...
A tattoo shop is definitely standard. That's a standard tipping place. I would assume a brothel is, from what I've heard about it, because basically that's where those girls make that money. I think what they do, I guess, get the image of it. But I think their money is made on the fact that, you know, they're getting a little extra for the snap and gyro trick that they do or whatever.
The snap and gyro trick.
Well, whatever. You know, there's something magical involved that they're involved with. But yeah, tattoo is definitely standard. Definitely standard to do that. Your garbage man is standard. Your mailman is standard.
Wait, stop. You're talking about like Christmas time or holiday time tipping?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant every time you see your garbage man, you slip him a five.
Hey, Chris, how you doing? Here's your mail. Hey, here's a little something for yourself.
Keep it coming. Keep the mail coming.
Hey, tomorrow I'll have another one here if you got to bring some more for me. Nice.
I get
your garbage man. Sorry, Brian, go.
I get my hair cut in like usually a faggy little salon. The girl who cuts my hair is no longer working at the salon, so I go to her home and actually get it cut. So usually you tip generously at one of those faggy little salons because the girls that are working there don't own the place. They're just working there. They get paid nothing, so you tip them over the top. Now that I go to her house and she cuts my hair, I still tip her ridiculously high. It's her house.
I think that's normal, though. I think you'd be a jerk if she, out of the goodness of her heart, is trying to keep you styled the way that you want to be styled out of her home and welcome you into the place where she lives and lives with family to do your hair styling. Even though she's keeping 100% of it now, you're getting an extra. I mean, there's a value add there that you should be tipping generously for. Your past generous tipping that got you the invite to her house in the first place.
Probably. That's generally how I look at it, but there's a little part of me that is in the back of my head that eventually she's going to get to another salon, and now I'm going to have to make my outrageous tip that much more outrageous because, oh, now, Brian, I'm not getting paid 100% of the base. You got to give me more tip.
Can we be honest for a second here, though, Brian?
Yeah.
Whatever this girl's doing to your hair, is it really worth all that much? It looks like your hair's been covered with a weed whacker for the most.
Yeah.
You have a generic, a fairly generic like fade, more or less.
It takes a lot of work to look this normal.
Yeah, I guess. It's a little odd to me. I don't see that. That you're getting the over-the-top crazy style that you need. Oh, I gotta go to this special person.
She takes at least 2 hours to get it done, too. This is not like I have to make a schedule. We have to make a plan. It's usually at night because she's got some other jobs and stuff. Like, it just kills an evening.
That blows me away, and I'm not saying it to be insulting. I'm saying, like, your hair looks cut with the weed whacker. I'm not trying to, like, bash you. Like, you have standard fair hair. I'm amazed that you feel like you have to go to a special stylist to do anything with it.
Listen, man, nobody...
I'm a dude who shaved my head in my bathroom, though.
Standard hair.
I got
freaking marvelous hair. You better back up.
He can't get that Bill Pullman special from anybody.
I hear what you're saying. You're saying it's not like some sort of faux hawk or anything, but it actually does take a buttload of time to make it look this good.
I'm telling you, when I look at your head, and again, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, it looks like any Italian dude that has a little pole in front of his that would cut your hair for $8 could do the same thing for you. I'm paying the toll now, guys.
I did that once, but I will say this. I'm sure a lot of it is just me and how I'm a little uptight about my hair or whatever, because I do go way over the top with maintaining it. But it's kind of like it took me a long time to find this girl. It took me a long time to get – I went through a lot of haircut people to find her, and then now to, like, drop her or lose her. I'm doing everything I can so I could keep that going. And it would be like – if I went to a barbershop and get my hair cut, I'd be kind of cheating on her a little bit. and she'd know it. I'd show up 2 months later, and my hair would be like normal size, and she'd be, well, what's up?
What are you doing?
Where are you going?
Another interesting point, not to do with tipping, but kind of the same thing along the lines of getting a tattoo from someone. Like, do you feel if you go to get a service from someone that's not your regular, do you feel like, obviously Brian does, that you're cheating on them in a way?
Definitely, and she would feel it as well. Sometimes I take too long between haircuts, and she gets a little concerned. She'll call me. She'll be like, "You didn't go anywhere else, did you?"
Okay, like, well, yeah, she's insane. That you do understand that this isn't the.
I will say that I just went through a toll booth here on the Jersey Turnpike, and the guy at the toll booth was not the guy that I usually when I go through. I still told him to keep the change when I went through, but it was a little bit awkward.
Chris, have you been going to other toll booths?
Well, hey, wait a minute! I haven't seen you.
I said to my doctor, I changed doctors recently because my doctor was acting kind of incompetent. And I told her that, this other doctor put me on a medication. And I said to her, well, yeah, I'm on Nexium now. This other doctor put me on it. And then I was like, yeah, you weren't in the office one day, so I had to go to a different doctor.
What? You got a second opinion?
But when you call your doctor on the day that your doctor's not there, don't they tell you what doctor to go to?
Yeah, referral, I think.
No, my doctor's answering service just says, no, she's not in the office, and that's it. But that wasn't the reason I went to her anyway, but a different one anyway. But yeah, no, they don't tell you anything.
That's odd. That's a very odd thing. Speaking of doctors, if I drop off the phone right now, could you guys get a satellite uplink going so I could, I'll hit you guys back up later and you guys enjoy the rest of your show?
Not just yet. Momentarily, we're headed that way. But I have to bring up something else now, Chris. If you drop out, you're off the show. Okay. Speaking of my sitcom life again, not only the tipping thing, but the other day I felt like I was in an episode of Three's Company. And
which one were you?
The idiot. Whoever the idiot is. This is what happens. My wife, when
Mr.
she comes
Roper?
Home, never wants to take her keys out, so she always has me buzz her in the building. So she buzzes. I open up the door. I hold the door open for her. I don't have to necessarily. I could just unlock it. But just to be a kind, courteous gentleman, I hold the door for her. So the other day, I'm in boxer shorts. And I was like, I had my shirt off, and I held open the door for her, and I was like, hey, let me be a little funny. So as she comes walking up, I hear her footsteps, and I say, me standing there in all my practically naked glory, hey, baby, what's going on? Apparently, my neighbor got off the train with her, and he was walking in front of her. So as the shadow and the footsteps approach, my naked ass says to my neighbor that lives across the hall from me, hey, baby, what's going on?
You're just wearing boxers? No t-shirt? No nothing?
Nothing. Oh. Just boxers. And boxers with a hole in the front. I might have even been a little out there. I'm not sure 100%. But, and he just turns and smiles and says, hey, what's up?
Nice.
He's a classy guy. That's a good response.
No, Vanessa, my mom does live in the building, but that's not my neighbor. Vanessa asking, isn't your neighbor your mom? Yeah, no, then I would have just immediately jumped right off my terrace and killed myself if that happened. But yeah, but and then I said to my wife, I shut the door, and I'm like, why didn't you somehow tell me? Or like, and she's like, well, what was I going to do? You know, like, and I was just like, I don't know, like, start a conversation, be talking
wait,
to him.
Wait,
you know?
Wait,
like,
you're mad at her now. You're mad at her for you being a fool, for you.
Obviously, your wife should have known that you might have been laying nude in the hall, so she should be setting, you know, so you know, no, now's not nude time.
Yeah, no, is that where you were going? You were actually.
Yeah, I know I shouldn't have been mad. I was just trying to misplace my anger somewhere else, you know, like kind of like she does to me, you know, like get mad at her for the reason that I felt like such a fool, you know, like.
Did you blush a little bit?
Oh, dude, I felt so stupid. And normally when you hear it, it's not the kind of thing. It's the kind of thing that I used to think was funny. I would think like, haha, that's so funny when it's happened. But like, I don't know, for some reason when it happened, it was just because this dude is just like some quiet, nice guy that lives across the hall from me, you know, And it would be funnier, right? It would be less embarrassing if he thought I was just doing that to him, like, just to be funny. But the fact that, like, that's how I answer the door to my wife is what this guy's thinking now.
Now, hold on. Did you see his face?
Oh yeah.
Was he smirky?
He was smiling. Yeah, no, he was smiling though. He was laughing.
Because
I said, "Hey, baby, what's going on?" And he turned and laughed and said, "Hey, you
know, I'll see you later."
So he actually acknowledged like I was talking to him. Yeah. You know, like
maybe he thought you were for a moment.
Maybe we have a date Tuesday, so we'll see what happens.
This quiet, nice guy that lives across the hall from you is now sitting there with visions of your sugar plums dancing in his head for the rest of eternity. Thinking about the fact that the hall likes to be naked and sexy for his wife in a way.
What's his situation? Is he single? Do you know if he lives alone? Do you know like what
he's a potentially gay single guy that lives across the hall. Very nice guy. I say potentially gay because I've never seen him with a woman, so obviously that means you're gay. You know, if you're not banging chicks left and right, you're gay.
Everyone potentially gay, though? Aren't we all potentially gay? It's just the dependence of you're potentially gay and potentially straight, just how much of each you have.
I have to come over to Keith's house right after the show today, point out his door, and I'll ring it with only my underwear. I'll ask him, what's up, baby?
Hey, I heard you're into this. I heard this is what you like. Yeah, so that was honestly ridiculous. It was I don't know. Played by Michael J. Fox is me.
A little bit, yeah.
I don't know. But all right.
But
Chris, you talking?
No, I just yelled bottom for no apparent reason cuz everything went dead silent.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is it's kind of hard to tell with the with the connection here, but
I'm not seeing your hand signals. I'm not seeing the hand signals.
Bro, yeah, that's right.
Maybe you should pay attention.
Why don't you log on in the chat room?
Do you care about the show or not?
No, obviously not. You know what's annoying me about the show and the chat room not being able to get in? I'm not able to hear the theme music yet. I'm waiting to hear it, and it's not even playing.
Yeah, we've got to work on our satellite connection.
I was hoping more than anything that it was going to start playing and I was going to hang up and like it was going to be a big moment. It was going to be a celebration. We were all going to go crazy and laugh and laugh. I actually have to be off the phone for that satellite uplink to happen.
Yeah, speaking of hanging up.
Bye.
What a jerk.
Oh, it was great hearing from him.
He ruins the show every week. Comes back in the room, then he leaves and we still can't get rid of him.
You know, at least behind the scenes, he and I can wildly hand argue at each other. It just doesn't work when it's over the phone.
Not bad that the first breakdown was an hour in, you know, like I was expecting it to happen a lot more.
And Chris's fault.
Well, I mean, no, isn't that pretty much the way it always
as usual, Zinger!
So, Brian.
Yes,
sorry,
Keith.
Are we going into this now? Or? No? Okay.
I'm still obsessed about the tipping thing just because of bar etiquette. It's a big thing with me as far as like how you...
Well, I overtip at a bar.
Do you overtip at a bar?
Here's the situation with a bar. I like to have singles ahead of time because I will give... I basically my thing is $1
singles.
$1 per drink is what I will give at a bar. How do you?
That's standard.
How do you roll?
That is standard. No, $1 per drink is standard, which means it's too little for me. Like I've got to at least one up the people around me. So, the first drink that I'm ordering, I'm just trying to order a round of drinks. So like, hey, let's get a round of drinks for everyone, and then that justifies my ridiculously huge tip the first time. But it's sort of like a, hey, look how much I'm tipping, you can take care of me for the rest of the day.
But let me ask you something. Don't they often change bartenders? And are you talking about in a specific place where it's always the same bartender?
I'm talking about that night, that day that I'm there. So, yeah, it's sometimes they change, and then you're SOL and you got to start the whole process over with the same, you know, this other bartender at the same bar. But most of the time I'm going to the same bartender anyway. Like, I'll go to the bar and I'll do it in my first round of the evening. I'll tip obnoxiously large, and then after that I just tip moderately large, and then at the end I'll tip obnoxiously large.
Now let me ask you something. If you give like a large tip and then there's a different bartender, will you now try to make up for the fact that it's a new guy?
Yes, I start I try to weasel myself over to the old bartender, but if a new one kind of like takes my order, now I start the whole process over again. So if this is the first time I'm being served by that one, she gets or he gets a ridiculously large tip. So I'm going through this cycle with every bartender.
I think we've discussed in the past too that I always get I hate being at a wedding because when I'm at a wedding and I don't have singles on me, like, what do you do at that point? Do you like tip the bartender ahead of time, like, for the?
Again, I do the same thing. Now, you're talking about a wedding, so I have to imagine it's a classy wedding, which means that it's
A barbecue wedding, you know.
Well, okay, are you is cash being exchanged with the? Are you paying? Is it an open bar?
No, it's an open bar.
Okay.
So I guess it doesn't have to be a wedding. Any open bar
situation.
Bartender,
my very first drink, he gets a 20. And then every drink after that, he gets like $2 or $3. And then at the end, he gets a 20.
So can I ask you guys something? When I was handing out Morning Rush and Kathy Roses a couple weeks ago, I didn't see any money slipped my way at all.
You're right. I'm sorry. Maybe that's why I got ass for drinks.
I don't know. It depresses the hell out of me. I don't know. It makes me think of music. I'm sorry, I have to openly laugh out loud at the absolute worst segue in history. It makes me think of a song. It makes me think it's kind of like you're on the verge of something and it's a matter of seconds and you're trying to stretch until it happens.
It makes me want to sing. Wow! Hey, Donna, what you doing in the computer not singing songs with Kristen, your mother? I hate this part. I'm
wow.
Sorry.
You should have let that go. Hey, Donna.
Oh, you guys are doing okay. You know, I know you're in a bit of a panic, but it's all right. You guys take a deep breath. It's okay.
Thank you. Actually, thank you very much for that.
You're welcome. So I'm in Beijing, China, awash in Olympic glow. Once every 4 years, like some kind of sports and nationalism cicada, I break out of my shell of ignorance about American athleticism and become abnormally interested in world records and USA chants. But something struck me Friday night as I watched the $100 million opening ceremony spectacular and the parade of nations that followed. I know that Team USA is viewed as formidable in most competitions, and that our current political administration is unpopular, but how are we viewed as people on the global stage? Here's what I saw. Countries holding their flags and heads high with reverence for the occasion, even the little countries that only send like 2 or 3 athletes, it was a big deal for them to be there. Dignitaries sitting upright and wrapped in their seats. And then Team USA, chewing gum with open mouths, hamming it up for the cameras, laughing with each other as they marched, many of them wearing their matching hats tweaked fashionably to the side because you'd hate to look dorky in front of the whole world. And leading by example, our own president, surrounded by the largest collection of attending heads of state and sovereigns in Olympic history, slumped over casually in his seat as if he were on his own couch with a beer. At one point, the camera showed him looking at his watch with a sigh, clearly bored and wondering how much longer he'd have to pretend to care about the rest of the world. Am I being too hard on us? Should I care if we are a nation of overweight anti-intellectuals who favor mouth-breathing and supersized fries to book learning and paying attention? Who wants to start a USA chant? The judgmental elitist of Best in Show Radio, I'm Vanessa Cheatwood.
Well, you know what? I haven't seen much of the Olympics, but I always wonder why the average Olympic athlete is always if you ever notice the people that get like commercial ads and stuff is always like some pothead snowboarder or something. Like there's some dude with long red hair, I don't know his name, Sean something or other.
I know the guy you're talking about, but that's not the average Olympic athlete.
No, but the average athlete that gets like an advertising deal that you know the media chooses to promote. So maybe that's part of it. Their reasoning is perhaps you know, maybe they don't want to be, you know, the who's a famous Olympic athlete from the past? The Mary Lou Retton girl next door person, you know, maybe they want to be like a badass or something.
See, I was going to say Mike Tyson. Wasn't he like an Olympic athlete at one point?
No.
No?
No, no. He played golf on the side.
What about Greg Louganis?
Gay. Sorry, it was a knee-jerk reaction. Oh. Yeah, I mean, I mean, he's a good guy, I guess. I mean, Vanessa, who was it? Any specific team that you're talking about, like popping the gum and flashing the boobs, whatever they were doing?
There was a large percentage of Team USA who were chewing gum as they paraded in the Parade of Nations. I mean, like chewing gum with their mouths open. It's like the biggest event in their lives, don't you think? Like, you can't spit your gum out and pay attention for, you know, an hour.
I mean, I guess the essence of it is that's the American swagger. That's the reputation that America has achieved in the world's eye. And God damn it, we're going to keep that reputation.
And isn't that what everyone wants to be? Like, everyone wants
to be the ugly American.
They want to be the NBA athlete that's over. And I haven't even seen those guys yet.
Kobe Bryant is there.
Is he? Was he chewing gum? Like, but that's what they want to be.
He wasn't chewing gum.
They want to be like the badass. You know, they want to be like what the hell's that guy's name? Allen Iverson of the whole thing, you know. They don't necessarily, because I mean, but that's just the way things are now, you know. Like, that's modern culture, I
God
guess.
Bless America. I don't it's even American know American culture.
I don't know if it's limited to America though. Western culture, right. I would say. You know, like, I'm sure there's some of the English athletes that aren't being, you know.
Well, isn't tennis supposed to be an Olympic sport? Like, isn't there's a whole bunch of people that are playing? Like, Federer is supposed to be playing in the Olympics or something like that. Am I wrong?
I'm not 100% sure. Vanessa, did you see Federer there or any tennis players?
I've not seen any tennis yet. The only events that I've seen so far are gymnastics and beach volleyball. There's some big beach volleyball players that are like undefeated for an entire year that are American. They're considered to be the big team.
Didn't the women's soccer team, didn't they like... I don't remember. Was it at the Olympics when one of the girls ripped her shirt off or something when they won? Unless it was the World Cup. I think your mic's not on. That was. Go ahead, Vito. By the way, everybody, welcome, Vito.
I think that what you're talking about is like that was.
I think it was the World Cup.
It was beach volleyball. Yeah, it was a.
No. It was soccer. Mia Hamm.
Oh,
did
that's
it.
Right.
Oh, it was Mia Hamm that did it. Really. So maybe that's setting the stage. Yeah, you know what? Nobody wants to
I'm sorry, not Mia Hamm. Brandi Chastain.
Wow.
Sorry about that.
Little creepy.
Now you're going to get sued by Mia Hamm.
Well, I guess what I was saying that is, I mean, the criticism is that we're the ugly Americans, that we're sitting here and the rest of the world can somehow, this is the most important point of their life. They're sharing experience with the rest of the world. They're reverent, to say the least. And the Americans are out there stroking their egos by popping their gum and rolling their sleeves up and flexing their muscles. And I mean, there was a little bit of that with like the cyclists wearing the masks. They were they started getting irritated about the smog and the environment. They came off the airplanes wearing masks, and it kind of pissed off a lot of the officials because they went out of their way to try to unpollute the city, or they closed down a lot of factories. They put all kinds of restrictions on the roads, and it just wasn't good enough for them. So they wore masks. It was irritating their throats, and then they apologized. And then wore masks for 2 or 3 days after that. It's kind of like I guess that's the American kind of ego. Everyone else seems to be suffering with it, but the Americans are like, you know.
And again, yeah,
sorry,
I think that's modern sports now. I mean, nobody wants to be like, you kind of look down upon if you're a sports traditionalist, you know, like everyone, like baseball players now want to be marketed as NBA players or NFL players, you know, like, I mean, that's just the way things are now. Maybe it's only us. I don't know, but
I just didn't think to a large part the rest of the world kind of looks as the Olympics as that be all end all type of thing. And there is like the whole world is gathering, and there's a certain amount of reverence and importance, whether it be misplaced or otherwise, to this particular event. And, you know, it's roots in sharing world peace and stopping all wars for a moment.
It's
so that
a
we
bigger
can,
deal in other countries than it is here, because we have more organized professional sports, I think.
And I think it also is the fact that, Vanessa was saying, like, you know, it's a, you know what, I think we're kind of, we take for granted, you know, our, the, how lucky, you know, like, not to get on the whole how lucky we are thing, but like, I think if you come from a country where there's a lot less opportunity to do things, you're going to look at the Olympics as like, you know, like, wow, like, holy crap, what an opportunity I'm getting. Where we're just kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Right.
You know,
these guys are using, hey, their appearance in the Olympics as I can move this into a professional sports career with some, you know.
Or in some ways, it's sometimes a human interest story where, say, for example, Tobago or Jamaica or one of the smaller countries, they'll only do three events because they can't, they don't have enough people to compete in the other events. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, let's look at their country and see, you know, not what they need so much, but kind of like it shines a spotlight. Why don't they have all these guys competing in all these other events? Well, this is why, you know. So I see what you mean. It's more of a diplomatic venture for other countries, whereas for us, it's just another thing to do.
Yeah, we have no sense of diplomacy.
Yeah.
We're out there spitting on the rest of the world pretty consistently or regularly, and this is just another example.
Damn right. Damn right. So, Vanessa, have you been watching, or have you been hiding in your hotel room in Beijing, or have you actually been watching any of these events?
I've been watching everything. So I've been watching everything that's, you know, that's accessible. Swimming was very exciting. We had a new world record, Michael Phelps. That was a big deal.
Fag.
Gymnastics is pretty disappointing this year. And beach volleyball. Those are like the big ones that were shown yesterday. Today's women's gymnastics.
Is there like, speaking of that, there's always a girl that stands out as the big gymnastics hero every 4 years. I remember there was Kerry Strug.
Mm-hmm.
There was Dominique Moceanu, who Chris was absolutely in love with, and apparently Rob as well, from the look on his face when I said her name. And the years before, I can't remember the previous
Mary
one
Lou
to
Retton.
That.
Mike Tyson.
Right, Mary Lou Retton. But there was one in between there, too, that was... who's the girl that landed on her broken ankle? That was Kerry Strug, I think, right? If any of you guys or Vanessa know, is there any, like, standout girl that's getting, you know, all the attention right now in the women's gymnastics?
Vanessa?
Unless Vanessa has an answer, I think I have a theory for that, and it just goes back to what we were just talking about.
I'm interested in Vito's theories.
Oh, no, it's...
more than I am.
Why is it always my theories that are interesting? I think it just goes back to what we were saying. Nobody cares in this country anymore. It used to be that the Olympics... when I grew up, I remember the Olympics being like this big patriotic event. Whereas, you know, you could hate your country, you could hate the Democrats, you could hate the Republicans all year round. But when the Olympics came, everybody just kind of, you know, were waving American flags everywhere. And I think that's why we don't know who the standout athlete is because we just stopped caring. I mean, it could be that we're, you know, stretched too thin with the war in Iraq and we have to support the troops. And, you know, that's been ingrained in our heads for I don't know how many years now, like since 2002, I guess, you know. So maybe we're just stretched too thin as a country, or maybe we just don't give a damn, you know.
I don't know. I think there was always a sense of that from the Americans' perspectives with the Olympics. For one thing, we were pretty hardcore with only having amateurs perform for the longest time, which doesn't really exist anymore, right?
Yeah, I was just talking to my fiance about that downstairs, about how I guess the 94 Olympics is when the Dream Team first showed up.
Something like that.
And then I think now hockey has taken the same road. And now they use professional hockey players in the Winter Olympics.
What made you excited about watching the Olympics was a Kerry Strug type thing. It wasn't something that you knew anything about her.
Right.
You watched the Olympics and you saw it evolve over this relatively short amount of time. Mm-hmm. Now you don't expect to see the professionals go in and have the game of their life in the Olympics. The professional basketball player isn't going to go out there and perform on a broken ankle.
And
Kerry Strug is going to.
Those guys are probably the guys that are chewing the gum, you know, and popping the gum during the national anthems and during the whole opening ceremonies, because these guys are professional players that play on a bigger stage than the Olympics. So it's just to them, you know, kind of spring training for them.
Yeah, exactly. There's less of an effort, and for that result, it takes a little bit of the sort of out of it.
By the way, the U.S. men's team just beat the Chinese team, I think, or they were winning last I checked. So they were very close to winning that game.
Plus, there's not enough marketing going on. It used to be you go to McDonald's and they had the you bought like the little peel off thing from your Coke, and it had like, hey, this person, and you put it on your little sheet, and if that person wins gold medals, you get a free Big Mac or something like that.
I used to get excited for the Olympics when I was younger, and then as they started and began, I would realize that I didn't care. You know, I would kind of just get bored with the whole thing.
But did you follow like one event in particular? Or?
You know what? The Summer Olympics, I don't really remember following much. When they had baseball as a medal sport for a while, I was into it, but they took that away for some reason.
They don't have it anymore?
No, I think they took it away for some reason. I don't think they only did it once. But I remember for some reason, I remember Herschel Walker during the Winter Olympics was on like a
bobsledding or something.
Bobsledding team or something like that. Yeah, I remember really being into that, and I remember being like somebody losing by missing out on the bronze for like by a split second, and I was all upset. But like,
see, that's why you watch the Olympics, because there's a chance that you're going to witness, you know, something that is going to be epic in sports that you won't be able to witness in from the perspective of like professional sporting events. Or certainly not from professionals playing in this amateur event.
Yeah.
You know, you have a good chance of actually seeing these amateurs play. That's why you watch, you know, NCAA basketball as well, because it's so freaking out there. You don't really know what's going to happen, and you have a chance to witness something. And I guess most of the time you sit through it, and it's really not all that exciting.
Well,
you do it anyway.
The other thing is to see if a world record would be broken. So, Vanessa, have there been any world records broken yet?
Yeah, the Michael Phelps in the swimming world record. He did it's the one where they do all the strokes, you know, and it's like the 400.
Is that the freestyle?
It ends in the freestyle. They do like the breaststroke and the, you know, and the backstroke. They do the whole thing. He set a world record that already.
Did any of you ever have any aspirations of when you were a kid of being an Olympian?
Do you know this story already? Or
No, not at all.
I was actually in 92. I don't look it anymore, but I was a pretty big athlete in high school and stuff. I turned down a scholarship to a college in Connecticut for volleyball, and in 92 I was actually invited to try out. Not invited to join the team, but invited to try out. For the men's volleyball team for 94.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Nobody knows that. But
indoor volleyball?
Yeah.
So it was like, what's that, six-man team?
Yeah, six on six. I can't do beach volleyball. I don't think beach volleyball was a sport at that point.
Yeah, I think that's a recent one. It was a sport, but it wasn't like an Olympic sport. You know, I could never even hit the volleyball over the net in my life, and like if I hit it forward, it was like a victory for me. That's like funny. Even if it was 5 inches in front of me,
I was really good at volleyball. I don't know if I was like Olympics, but
I don't know that I was Olympics either. I mean, again, I was going based on the fact, I turned down a scholarship, you know, which is dumb, but you know, I could have probably done something with it. But I was going on the fact that okay, I'd gotten a scholarship for volleyball, maybe I should, you know, try this, you know. And like you were saying, I always wanted to be in the Olympics. I don't want to be that guy with my kids, you know, where like, you know, like forcing them to pick a sport and like, you know, let's go to the Olympics. But like, I would love it if one of my kids, you know, said, you know what, Dad, I want to try to be in the Olympics. I'd be right behind it.
Well, at least you were giving your kids attainable goals. Will you be disappointed at all if
they don't get
the bronze and dedicate it to you?
I think
freaking egomaniac.
Oh my God, that's not even it. Am I that dad? Am I like the
Oh, I think I'd be okay dad? If one of my kids maybe, you know, got in the Olympics.
Son, this is gold. You will either see this at 18 or you will see a new apartment. Vanessa, any Olympic aspirations as a child for you?
No. I can barely walk forward. Like, I consider it a success if I don't stub my toe.
In 1996, I got so into the Summer Olympics that I decided, whatever year it was around then, that I remember saying, at this point, I'm 22 years old, and I remember asking people, like, what could I maybe do? And keep in mind, I had never participated in any of the Olympic events ever in my life, like, not even played on the side, and I'm just like, what could I do to be an Olympian in 4 years? What can I do to get to Sydney in 4 years?
That's
like,
very similar to our friend Red Dave, who decided, I guess at 32... that he was going to try out to be a place kicker for the Jets, but he never went through it. Through that, I mean.
I spent a lot of time in my early formative years doing track and field, amongst other sports that I performed, and I was like a long distance runner as well as like indoor and outdoor long distance. And I would lie if I would say if you've ever done that, you've envisioned yourself in the Olympics running against different countries, even if you've sucked like I did. And I guess that would be like the only time that I ever really consider it, because you are in that competitive mode. when I was skateboarding for a little while, I had like a little sort of amateur sponsorship with my local skateboarding joint, awesome. Which meant they gave me gear for free if I skated in competitions for them. They didn't pay me by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah,
and I was even like in a little Thrasher magazine ad for them.
Get like a patch or something to wear, or
T-shirts? They gave me all kinds of stuff to. But I mean, I always kind of considered, yeah, this will be it. This is the way. If I keep training and I keep to, eventually they'll invent it in the Olympics and I can skate for America.
Oh my God. Yeah, I when I was a kid, I guess like I didn't want to be a swimmer, but I wanted to be like in one of those like relays, you know, like any kind of running relay and stuff, but like I couldn't run. So when I was in high school, I was on the track team as well, but I did all those individual sports like shot put. I did the long jump, I think, and the triple jump. But I couldn't imagine long distance running. Are you kidding? What was the typical
cross country was like 2.5-3 miles. I went with the indoor and outdoor. Pretty much, it was the 2 mile races, or if you a short long distance run is a mile. Sometimes you do a half mile run, but indoor was the worst because their tracks are so much tinier. Like a mile around the out and outdoor track is, you know, 4 laps.
Right.
A mile around an indoor track is like 20. Jeez. And it's just having to do the 2 mile race is just like, and it's just always turning. There's no straightaway.
Yeah. I think I once did a relay, like a 400 relay, just because we were down a man. And it was the most ridiculous thing ever because you're only running 100 yards, you know, but there's no such thing as like pacing, you know, like
you just sprint, fall out sprint. You know? Yeah.
I want to make up some new ones, like like maybe jumping. Like, why wouldn't jumping be an Olympic event? I know it seems stupid, but I would think that if you could jump, like, ridiculously high, that would be, like...
What is the jump where you go over the bar backwards?
Backwards jumping. Backwards bar jumping, I think it's called, actually.
Well, the funny thing is, like, just saying jumping, I remember in high school, we were allowed to go over it forward. I don't think you can do that, like, in the Olympics or anything, but, like, we were allowed to go over it, like, over the top. Which is ridiculous, but, you know, like, they would allow that and just keep raising the bar higher and stuff.
You're talking about the oh, I was thinking of the pommel horse thing. Where
No. Like, you know, like, with the pad there and the... Does anybody in the chat room know what this is called? I just can't remember what it's called.
Describe it again.
It's the backwards jump where you, you know, kind of, like, go over your back, you know, like, over the bar gets raised every couple of minutes. I sound like an idiot.
High jump. I did that. Yeah, I did that in track and field. High jump.
Yeah, in high school, they would allow us to go over it forward. I don't know why.
Well, like, the original way that they did it is, I mean, there is no rule legitimately. Is that it's so when people were first discovering how to do it for decades, when it became a competition, you went over forward. And it was, I forget the guy's name, but they named after the guy who discovered the fact that you can actually go higher, the something flop, and whatever that guy's name is.
Oh, you're right.
John Belly it was.
The belly flop. And you got to, and that was the way that they sort of train you to get higher.
That's funny.
But yeah, you can totally go, and they, before the flop, they didn't have like a pad on the other side. They had like kind of just sand or like dusted up wood so that when you landed on your feet, you know, and like fell on your knees or whatever, you could kind of make it. Now that you're doing the back flop.
Right.
Landing on the ground was, what the hell was that? The something flop.
So if any of you, forgetting about regular Olympic things, what one thing would you be a gold medalist in your life? Like Vanessa, what if there was something you could win a gold medal in? What would it be? What are you so good at?
Condescending to people.
But do you think you're a gold medalist? Because I mean, as condescending as you, yeah, you are really good at it, actually. Because
yeah,
I know
really
people that are really good at it, but I think Chris would give you a run for your money in that, though.
Yeah,
gold medal in sarcasm.
No.
Yeah. Well. I was, you know, and I ended my report with saying that I was somehow the elitist of the group, but we know that's Brian. Like,
yes,
I really, I can't believe he didn't call me out right then.
Do you know what's funny though? Like after
like, no
today,
no way, he is the judgmental elitist of Best in Show Radio.
But now after today, Brian has just shown his true colors. Like, we'll all talk about sports, but Brian will always be quiet. Now we know the sport that we have to talk about to get Brian talking.
It just happened to be sports that I performed in. It's so not like I follow it. I have just as much interest watching track and field as I do watching any other sport. That said, I watched some Olympic boxing yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It was actually pretty cool. It was like light middleweight sort of stuff, which meant they just beat the crap out of each other for a while. It was pretty good.
So, Brian, what would you be a gold medalist in?
Wow. I would be a gold medalist in isolation.
No, I don't think so.
You're, I think I'd be pretty good at staying away from other people. I could dodge your touch with my eyes blindfolded.
Yeah, but you're constantly out at bars drinking, being a social butterfly. You know, like, so I don't think that's necessarily. Well, I'm trying to think of what I think you would be a gold medalist in.
I think being alone. I actually enjoy being alone a lot, particularly now with the freaking video games. Oh my god!
But you go to places where they
do anything.
You go to places where everyone sits around and sings Jimmy Buffett songs. So I think that automatically disqualified you.
I was going to say you're already missing. He's the gold medalist in drinking by himself, I guess.
He's not the gold medalist in drinking. I think we.
No.
Yeah. I'm a bronze at best in this room.
I am a gold medalist in panicking, I think. And I think we've all witnessed that today.
Worry. Reckon, so. Worry,
panic, anxiety.
Yeah. You'd be up there. You'd be a pretty tough competitor with anxiety.
Yeah, I'm like a mess. Insane. And the Red Bull's not helping either, though. I think I need to smooth down and mellow down a little bit. I think I need that did you ever see that anti-energy drink?
What?
The Big Bear.
Hot.
It's called
beer.
Warm milk.
I can't remember the name of it. Oh, Drank,
Scotch.
It's called. It's this guy that's rapper named Big Bear put out this anti-energy drink called Drank. And it says on the can, slow your roll.
What?
I wish I had one right now.
What is the drug that's in it? Or what's the thing? What makes
heroin.
It?
Heroin. You actually don't drink it the normal way. There's a little apparatus, and you drink it directly, sort of.
So is it soda? Can any kid get it? Can an 8-year-old waltz into wherever they buy drinks and get drank?
Yeah, probably. I mean, should eight-year-olds could buy Red Bull too, for that matter. You know, should they be? Probably not.
So, are you supposed to drink this after drinking an energy drink, or if you drank it cold, would you just fall
asleep? That's like Speedball. I don't think you should do that. No, I think it's just like, oh man, I'm so wound up. I need a drink. You know, and then I'll try to find it online so we could
get my drink on.
That's disturbing. It just brings you down.
What?
It just brings you down. I mean, it slows your roll.
It slows your roll, yeah. It's the opposite of an energy drink. It's like, you know, you're anxious, you're wound up, you're tight, and then you just gotta, you need to chill, so to speak, you know? Like, so you pick up a drink.
Wikipedia. Purple drink is a slang term for a recreational drug popular in the hip-hop community of southern United States. Its main ingredient is prescription-strength cough syrup.
Nice.
Containing codeine and promethazine. So this guy is marketing something that is that's banking on the sort of slang of drinking cough syrup, of robo-tripping, basically.
And for the record, it's the flavor on it is purple.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
It's not even grape. It's purple.
As Homer Simpson said, purple's a fruit. Maybe we'll get Big Bear on the show one day. We'll have him bring some drinks in and see what's up. Well, Vanessa, anything else you want to tell us about China?
No.
When are you coming home? We miss you.
I just got back, amazingly enough. I play World of Warcraft now.
What's it like, Wednesday there?
It's 2004 there, I think, actually. Vanessa, as always, thank you very much for the report.
Thank you.
Vanessa Cheatwood.
Thank you very much. Good luck for the rest of the,
Yeah, I'm just leaving, so don't worry about it. Wish these guys luck. It's good. Bye.
This is Germ Freak, co-host of the DJ New Style Show, broadcast live every Tuesday from 9 to 11 Eastern Standard Time on HearsTalk.com. That's HearsTalk.com, the thing you do with your ears, and the place to be.
Germ Freak Radio presents...
Is It Gay?
Oh, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, it's that part of the show where Germ Freak forgets how to be a heterosexual and has a list of things that he might want to do, might want to be a part of, and might be gay.
Is it gay to hold a door open for another man?
Yeah, I think it could be a little gay, though. My thing of it is, if you hold it for somebody, it's almost like you're trying to make that person gay. It's like you're saying, hey, you know what? Yeah, go in. I'm the man. Go in. What's next, Frank?
All right. Is it gay to ask another man to sing a little bit of a song that he's trying to tell you about because you can't recall which one it is?
So he has a song in his mind, and the only way he can convey what the song is by singing. He's like, hey, Frank, you know that song? Must have been love.
Oh, my God.
Jesus Christ.
It's awful.
Frank, what's next?
Is it gay for a guy to mail another guy a birthday card?
Absolutely gay. I think it's borderline gay to wish a guy happy birthday. Borderline gay.
Wait a second. You're saying you feel a little queer wishing another guy a happy birthday?
It's borderline gay. It's approaching gay. It's friendly, but you're getting there. I mean, you have to know the person.
The DJ New Style Show is broadcast live from New Jersey every Tuesday night from 9 to 11 p.m. on Hear Us Talk. That's hearustalk.com, the thing you do with your ears, and the place to be! You could also hear it in the Hear Us Talk radio chat room on Pal Talk. The DJ New Style Show is proud to be part of the Hear Us Talk radio network. Thank you.
Best in Show Radio is brought to you by MyProfile.com.
Come in.
Sup, Mo? What are you doing?
Nah, chillin'. Just setting up my profile.
Nobly done. You haven't set up your MySpace profile yet?
Not my MySpace profile. My profile on MyProfile.com.
What's the difference?
Well, MySpace is for fags. Profile's for knockaround guys like you and me.
I don't know. I kind of like them surveys on MySpace.
Bro, surveys? You kidding me? My profile's got tons of surveys. And MySpace surveys ask you stuff like, what's your favorite book? You freaking kidding me? My profile asks you stuff like, yo, what are you doing later? How much can you bench? And yo, you know who I'm with? And hey, what are you, a fag?
I ain't no fag. Why'd you hear something?
Nah, that's a question on my profile. My profile also lets you choose your heroes, just like MySpace does.
Oh, that's sweet. Let me fill my heroes in. Hey, it wrote Jeter and DiMaggio before I even started. How did it know?
My profile fills in some stuff by default. Every page comes complete with the Yankees logo and a picture of Scarface. Plus, check out my awesome pics. My profile gives you three choices of spray tan shade to put on your body and face.
I don't know, Mo. Your profile looks pretty good.
Hey, what are you, a fag?
No, but I'm definitely going to my profile today. Hey, where did that name come from, anyway?
I don't know, bro. Not sure. What do I make, like a book guy or something? Maronna me.
MyBROfile.com. Filing bros since 2007-ish.
Yeah, you guys got to definitely go to MyBROfile.com and set something up there soon. You are listening to Best in Show Radio. Thank you for hanging with us today. HearUsTalk.com. You can find us and you can find the wonderful DJ New Style program, which is on Tuesday nights from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. DJNewStyle.com or DJNewStyle.com?
DJNewStyle.com.
And by the way, Best in Show very soon will be coming at you live on Thursday nights. We are the new NBC Thursday night hit show and along the line of Cheers, Family Ties, and The Cosby Show.
We are going to be the best thing on Thursdays on HearUsTalk.com.
No, I think Brix's comments in the chat room might be a little bit better than us, but we'll be the second best thing. But yeah, and for at the very beginning, we're not going to be on NBC. We're actually only going to be on HearUsTalk.com at first. But
HUT.
False.
Exactly. But WHUT. And that's that. Want to talk about the world of sports a little?
Yeah, definitely. Did you see any preseason games yet?
No, you see, I don't watch preseason football because I can't wait for the first preseason baseball game. Even if the Mets will be playing Michigan State or something the last day of February, and I'm just saying, damn it, why can't I watch that?
Is it like? I mean, you're a bigger baseball fan than football, right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. See, I'm a bigger football fan than anything really, but is it that you can't? It doesn't count until the kickoff, the opening kickoff. You know what I mean?
You know what it is? I get so excited for football to come on. Now, I get excited for baseball, too, but I can't not watch baseball. If there's any kind of baseball going on, maybe that's how it is with you in football, but if there's any kind of baseball going on, I need to see it. Like, I watch the Dominican League in the winter, you know, like just
why?
Because I just I'll have to always be watching baseball. And yeah, I want to see, like, you know, some guy from the Mets, from Double A Binghamton team. I'm like, hey, let me see how that guy's playing.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Like, but
I actually saw the Cyclones play the Staten Island. What are they called?
Yankees.
Yeah, Staten Island Yankees. I can't believe I just said that.
Freaking Yankees.
But yeah, no, I saw them play like over in the Richmond County Township
Ballpark.
Fire Hall or whatever. Yeah, but but yeah, it was actually a lot of fun. Like, I mean, I've never, you know, been to a minor league game, but it was decent. They had like it was weird though, because they had this one girl who
playing between, third base.
No, God, I wish. Who in between every inning would come up with like some kind of weird, kind of interactive activity for the audience. So one of them was, you had to determine whether a lyric was actually from a country music song or if it was just made up. Now, why country? I don't know.
Wait, hold on a second. This is a Cyclones employee, or is this just a person in the...
A Yankees employee, yeah.
Yankees. Oh, okay. I thought this was just a girl sitting around, hey, everybody.
I wish.
And, okay, what Travis Tritt song is this?
Yeah, totally. Then there was... they had, like, these kids tell jokes. They had a dancing competition, which, as soon as me and Michelle walked into the ballpark, this guy just accosted me and said, would you like to dance? Like, and I was, well, no, I don't want to dance at all, you know. And thank God Michelle, you know, could have talked me into doing it, you know, and I probably would have been, all right. These people had to wear tutus and, like, try to, like, hype up their side of the stadium. I would have been mortified.
For what, though? Like, what was there a reward for?
You ready?
It, or?
Every time anybody did something that you win a t-shirt.
So you have to dress in a tutu and dance like an idiot for a t-shirt.
Yeah, and I just, like, once I found that out, I was like, yeah, that's definitely not worth it, you know? Like, give me, like, a free ticket or an upgrade right now, you know? Like, put me behind home plate right now, you know?
The upgrade would have to be, like, you know, like, on the pitching, the mound or something, you know? Like, to pitch the seventh inning. I mean, it's not even that. It's just, like, I think that's designed for people that would do it anyway because they want to be, like, the center of attention, probably.
Right, right.
And then they say, hey, we'll give you a t-shirt, you know?
Like people that are hams or something. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Like
kids,
Mia?
Yes. Taking off a shirt. But don't get me wrong. The kids doing the jokes were kind of cute, you know. It was a cute little thing, you know. But there was one really cool one where these guys were doing leapfrog over each other, you know, and like they had two people at the two ends of the stadium doing them. Whoever got to home plate first won. And the thing is, at this point, it's like maybe fifth inning, so people are, you know, kind of drunk at this point. So it's like these guys just leaping over each other with flippers on, a frog hat, you know, some kind of frog cowl or something, and like weird frog hands. So they're kind of awkward, you know. They're not exactly, other than being, you know, drunk, you know, they're not exactly like in their normal state of comfort.
Fagginess.
What the hell? Yes. Kind of crazy circus is this place?
The Staten Island Yankees. What it is.
You know, when I was I was at Shea Stadium earlier this year, they have like a dance off in between innings, and like they'll have
what the hell is
they'll
this?
Have a
yeah, I don't get it either.
They'll have a child, like, you know, about 11, 10 years old, whatever, get on each dugout and dance, and they'll put them up on the board, and then after they're done dancing, you have to cheer for, you know, like it's
right.
An applause meter to decide who wins. And there was this girl that was probably like 12, and this kid that was a little younger, and the boy was dancing his ass off, if I may say, and the girl was kind of like, I guess, shy, so she wasn't really getting into it. And at the end, this dude behind me yells, that girl got schooled by that dude, by that little dude.
Wow. I'm trying to envision.
She,
like,
got schooled.
I'm trying to envision being at a game and watching this happen and not wanting to kill people.
You know what, Brian, out of nowhere Thursday night says to me, hey, want to go to the Met game tomorrow night? He was ready. He was raring to go. He was psyched for it. And I was like, yeah, hell yeah. And then
I had tickets.
He had tickets. He was getting the tickets. And then I said to my wife, hey, you want to go to the Met game tomorrow night? And then she bailed out on me. But but at some point, I want to go to a baseball game with Brian so he can because I have a feeling that Brian will be the gold medalist at cringing if he goes to...
The stories that you guys are telling me right now would make me so angry. If I actually had to... If that was happening up on the screen, I couldn't not watch that, and I would just want... I would hate those people.
Will you get into, like, a fight at a...
No, I don't think... I mean, no. I've been at plenty of sporting events, and people are... They have their a-hole meter is turned up to about 15, and I've not gotten in any kind of, like, fights
right.
or anything like that. That said... I've been involved with yelling at people at a tennis match. Which I prefer tennis because there is some there's the unspoken rules that you have to shut up while the game is happening.
So you
loudness.
So you yell out loud like while it's going on.
It's like there's this little part there's a time in it where the guy's like kind of hitting the tennis ball on
getting
the ground getting ready to serve that it's the crowd is winding down and preparing for him to serve where you're supposed to be absolutely silent. And the children in there will take that opportunity to scream their name or to scream, yeah, go for it, or something
Billy!
Like that. And I got stuck behind or in front of a group of kids that were maybe like four seats behind me that were doing that every time they would go up for a serve. And I was gritting my teeth. I was giving the stink eye. I was turning back and looking at someone.
Gritting my teeth.
Oh, I was trying because there were adults there that were with the children, right, and they should have been smacking them around or making them not happen. And finally, someone yelled something to the nature of like they said something. They yelled, "Yeah, go whatever your name is." And like some guy a couple rows down said, "Shut the F up. This isn't effing Chuck E. Cheese," or something like that. And I was like, yeah! And I'm clapping and cheering and everything. And meanwhile, now the guy's serving, and I'm now the loud guy.
Okay, I misunderstood. I thought you were like drunk and yelling, like, serve, when he's about to hit the ball or something like
no,
that. Like,
it's just, I mean, the fact that it's supposed to be recognized that you're breaking someone's concentration while they're doing this, and you can kind of slip stuff in there every, you know, once in a while to cheer the person on without disturbing them. These kids were doing it every freaking time, and it was just about trying to be loud enough so that they would be noticed or on TV or something like that, and
That's funny because
I freaking hated them.
I went to a tennis match once, and I fell asleep, and some blonde guy in glasses yelled, "Wake up!" You know,
But he yelled what? Wake up?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means.
It's a callback to Brian on the train.
I had a train tale where I almost got into a fight, actually, if you don't recall. I was at Canal Street.
Okay.
Brian's train tales. Something happens to this stupid son of a bitch on a train every week.
Yeah, I actually have another train tale to tell. And it's kind of a throwback to a different one as well. I told one a while ago about this little trick that I've done like two or three times.
Is this the somebody's got their bag on a seat, yeah, so you throw it out the train?
It irritates me. It happens less and less, and the opportunity for being able to do it is getting less and less, and it's such a prick move that I don't know if I'll ever get to actually do this thing again. But man, I really wanted to when I saw something happen earlier this week. Which, by the way, the trick for anyone who hasn't heard, someone is taking up a seat next to them with a bag, either unwittingly because they're an idiot or because they're trying to keep the seat taken from some stranger sitting down next to them. And it gets crowded and people are sort of lingering around the seat. And if I'm bold, which is to say drunk enough, I've walked over to the bag, grabbed it, and thrown it out of the subway train as the doors are opening and people are getting ready, and they're forced to run away for it.
You're a monster.
With my intention being, you know, oh, I didn't realize this was yours because, you know, this must have been someone who just left it there before. I'm playing stupid. This must be, you know, someone left this there. They were inconsiderate. Oh, you're the inconsiderate guy. You better go get your bag. I really wanted to do that when I saw a lady on the train on my way home from work. Again, a really crowded one. She's got a kid, like an infant with her, like a baby, and she's holding on her lap or in front of her. And she's in one of the two seat, to try to describe how the subway works. You walk in the door and there's a three seater that's leaning up against the wall of the train, and then there's a two seater that's perpendicular to that.
These are the bucket seats, the bench.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and there's a word for that method of seating. I think it's like conversational seating or something like that. I used to know this, but she's sitting in one of the conversation seats, the two bangers, and she's sitting up against the window, and she's got the kid on her lap, like wrapped up in a bonnet or some sort of blanket or something around her. So the kid doesn't need to take up the seat, and she's got plenty of room to put on, you know, anything else that she has on her lap. But instead, she's got this, like, diaper bag thing on the seat next to her.
But, all right, see, in that case, though, isn't she sort of, when there's two people, even if one of them is a small child, isn't she sort of compensating for the fact that her child isn't in the seat by putting the bag on there?
I don't feel that that's logical. If you could, if there's a seat available and there's a person who is uncomfortable and standing and should be able to sit down, like an old person or even someone who's not old, if there's a teenage kid who walked into the thing and he wants to sit his ass down and he can't because your bag needs to be comfortable, you should be shot.
Well, this is
unacceptable.
Isn't it a matter of convenience for the mother so that she can get to what she needs for the baby?
Okay.
I'm just asking. I mean, you know.
In my opinion, no, because she had enough space on her lap to do it, and it became apparent that that wasn't what was happening because the diaper bag was only taking up half of that space. Hmm. And like a skinny little 20-year-old kid. And I wasn't the only one. People were going up to the lady and sort of like nodding down and looking at, you know, how the little eye game that you play about, right, like, right, hey, move your stuff. And she wasn't having it. She was looking back and like looking around and sort of acknowledging the fact that because I have a kid, I'm special and you can't sit here next to me because I have an infant on my lap. And people were accepting that. I was thinking like I'm taking crazy pills or something. And now you're saying this kind of thing as well. No, if that's what people are thinking, they shouldn't be thinking it. You should be able to sit down on the seat if you're tired. And she's maybe doing you a favor by not having the kid sit next to him. But if there's not a person taking up that seat, a person should be able to take up the seat, not your bag.
Can you...
And let me finish. I'm sorry. That 20-year-old little skinny kid walks into the car and is bold enough, not even thinking, not even seeing the five people before who tried to eyeball their way into the seat, just kind of waltzed on, saw the half-empty seat, and squeezed his ass onto the half-empty seat and sat sideways, you know what I mean, to try to get it there.
So maybe
and
we should have that guy's train tails from now on.
Her response was, and I just wanted to choke her. It was awful. He got up and left five stops later, and in the recognizing that there might be some other stranger that's going to sit next to her, she moved her bag further over to the chair.
See,
to
that
take
would
up
annoy
more
the
space.
Hell out of me.
I wanted to freaking punch her.
But
I
you
wanted
do
to punch her.
That if you picked up her diaper bag and threw it out the train, somebody else probably would have hit you.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wasn't going to... I don't... Even in the most drunk state, I don't think I would have actually, like, chucked anything about
that's
it. And it's lucky for her that I had a seat, because I would have, if that seat wasn't taken, I would have roamed over and I would have said something. I might have even... Because I was so angry about it, I might have even said, move your bag. And if she didn't, there would have been words.
Why wouldn't you just take the child and throw them out of the train? Then at least you know she's going straight out the door. She's not going to argue with you.
That's what I mean. I mean, she would have gotten... there's no way that... I guess because of the simple nature that she got knocked up and has a kid with her, I would have given... I wouldn't have been as violent or as arrogant or as much of a prick with her, which doesn't make sense to me. Just because you are moron enough to bring a child into this world, I have to babysit you?
Well, you
stop
know,
it.
I got to tell you, you know what annoys me about people with kids on trains or more importantly, buses? All right, I ride the bus to work, to and from work, pretty much every day. And if anyone that's not familiar with the New York City MTA buses, basically, I don't know if all buses are like this, but the way they're set up is there's double seats on one side, and then there's single seats on the other side.
Okay,
and
yeah.
I prefer to sit in the single seat because I don't want anyone sitting next to me because it's just a thing. I hate when people sit next to me. They're
nobody wants a stranger sitting next to you.
Of course.
You don't have a right to lock a stranger from sitting next to you, though.
No, you don't have a right to it, but I
unless
don't want
unless you have a kid, apparently. Then well, it's okay.
Or a diaper bag, at least. You tell people the kid's at home. But I like being in those seats. It drives me insane when there will be somebody at a bus stop with maybe three or four kids ahead of me. They'll get on the bus, and the kids will all run to the individual seats.
Yeah.
And the parent, instead of saying, no, you will come here, sit here, instead of exercising a little control over their kids, instead they'll just let them sit there. And now I have to go sit in a double seat next to somebody that's... Or This bothers me too. This bothers me too.
That's not just children. People do that. Two guys will get onto a bus and sit in the double seats, one in back of the other, and have a conversation.
And now I have to go sit next to, or the express bus going into Manhattan. Brian is filled with rage right now. I've never seen it before. But the express bus going into Manhattan, there'll be this is all double seats now. So there'll be two.
Right.
Empty. There'll be basically four seats left. Two double seats with no one in them, and two people will go and they'll sit on either one instead of just sitting next to each other.
I know.
The worst part about the express bus is that little lane in between. So if those seats get filled up, you know, because the seats will get filled up, you know, really quick. So if the seats get filled up, people have to stand in those like little, you know, that little tiny aisle. It's not even an aisle. But yeah, the express bus the other day I was on it and. That's it. No.
nice.
Yeah, thanks. No, I was on the express bus a couple days ago, and that same thing happened where people, what they did was instead of, they sat funny too. Like one sat on the inner seat and one sat out of the outer seat so they could turn and look at each other. You know, and it's like, wait a minute, you know, why don't you just you know, they're
sit next to each other, you freaking so entitled room. Pricks.
There's so much room on the express bus with those seats, and they're coming. It's like, why wouldn't you just sit there? They don't have a, like on an airplane, the armrest doesn't go down. There's no armrest in between the chairs. So there's a little bit more room. So why wouldn't you just sit? It annoys me no
one.
And
those seat backs are larger, so they have to like get up and kneel and look around, and it's all uncomfortable
for
them.
They tilt back.
They're going out of their way. They're making themselves uncomfortable to make you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I've actually been like one of the last people on an express bus, and somebody will come sit next to me and someone else will sit next to someone else, and they'll be talking, you know, like it'll be two people together. And I remember there was this guy with his wife or girlfriend, whatever, and I actually said to them, I said, you know, I actually stood up and I said, you want to come sit here and I'll go sit there, you know, like, because I'm sitting next to a stranger anyway, so they [S2] Right. [S1] I might as well let them sit together. And they were, you know, oh, thank you, you know, like, but yeah, so to get on and just intentionally do that. My wife does that all the time. When I'll get on a bus with my wife, there'll be two single seats left, and there'll be an entire row of double seats, and she'll go sit in the single seats and then turn around and talk to me. And I yell at her. I say, "Why can't we just
not
go sit
allowed.
In the double seats?"
No,
I don't want to sit.
No,
there.
Not
no,
allowed.
I don't sit
if
there.
if my girlfriend did that, I would insist that
You'd
she
throw
moved
her
to
off.
The second. I would insist that she moved to the second seat. If she stood up for herself and said, "No, I'm not moving," then I would stand next to her because it would be inconsiderate to take up two seats. Just take up three seats and be a prick. Sorry.
See, Brian's thing, I kind of know Brian is insane, but Brick's in the chat room saying Brian's going to kill my wife one day.
you better tell her to keep her hands on her bag. That's all I'm saying.
But Brian, this actually stems, believe it or not, Brian's train tales basically stem from Brian being an overly considerate person. And I think that doesn't come off that way. He comes off like a maniac, which he is, but Brian is so considerate that and I'm kind of the same way. I am so considerate to people in general.
How considerate are you?
I am so considerate that when people are not considerate back to me, it sends me into a rage.
It doesn't even have to be back to me. You don't have to acknowledge my consideration, but being inconsiterate.
Yeah,
just
flat out
being inconsiderate for the people around. And it's so much worse when you live in a city with so many people. And it's always exaggerated in the situations when all those people are together.
That's too many of us.
Let's have a war.
I was on the way here. I was on I was taking the bus to get on here, and you get out from the subway to a bus and you're standing in line, and it's kind of like there's a little bit of a race to get out from the subway and up to stand in line for the bus, because if you're one of the first four people on the bus, you get one of those little individual seats and don't have to sit next to a freak. So you position yourself to come out by the stairwell, you make your way up there, you forego going into the deli and getting some food for you because you've got that seat, and some fat piece of crap lady wobbles over after there's been a queue of like 30 people and like goes up to the front of the line and starts looking innocently at the schedule, and then like the bus pulls up and the doors open and you know the guy says, "All right, come on in," and she snakes her way right as she's looking at the schedule, she walks up in front of people, and I'm livid. I'm just screaming. I'm in a rage of like, you back of the line, lady. There's a line back here. Make it happen. And well, it's just like, and it's not me. She's butting me, I guess, like, technically. But there's three people in front of me that she's butting, and none of them are saying crap.
That brings
I fucking hate people.
That brings me to
Oh my god.
I knew Brian was full of legitimate rage.
Not that we have a bad day today.
I'm really sorry.
We have to actually go back and edit this show.
It's cool. You're just fired. That's all.
The show is now explicit.
You know what that brings me to is one of the things I'm sure I've said this before because it makes me crazy and it happens every. I wanted to join Brian. It's every effing day. Is I'll be on the train, right? And now look, the way the train works is the stop I get off, the Staten Island local train, the stop I get off, the second door of the front car is lined up perfectly with the staircase. Now, Staten Island bus drivers are the biggest a-holes on the planet, the majority of them. And the best is, a Staten Island bus driver at my job actually told me this, not that I didn't know. And I said, yeah, man. I said, yeah, they kind of are. What's the deal with that? And he's like, oh, they're all miserable. You know, like, but anyway, they're probably the biggest jerks on the planet. And, like, you can get off the train and you can run for the bus and they will roll through a green light and they'll step on it. Oh, I mean, I'm sorry. They'll roll through a red light just to not have to stop and pick you up. That's basically the experience I normally have. So I need to get off the train as fast as possible. So what I'll do, if I'm running late, I'll get on the front car. I'll make sure I stand at the second door or get close to the second door so I can be one of the first people off. But I will run down the stairs. Old people, for some reason, they know that that's the door that lines up there, too. So this 140-year-old couple will regularly stand at the front door, that door, and then they will get off, and they will take 4.5 hours getting down the stairs. And now, so my whole thing is, look.
You're losing your place in line every second that ticks away.
Yeah, and I've missed the bus repeatedly because of this. And look, if you're slow, that's fine. You hang out a second. If I'm not in a rush, I'll let everyone go, and then I'll walk slowly down the stairs because I don't feel like it.
And certainly don't bank up shoulder to shoulder and take up the entire walkway. At least be a little considerate and walk behind the person or something.
Oh, no. Hand in hand, yeah. Down the stairs. And like, nobody's even going to be able to pass them at this point.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
I'm DJ Newstyle, host of the DJ Newstyle Show. I like to do things in one take, just like this little promo I'm about to do. But before I get to that, let me ask you something. What are you doing on Labor Day? Nothing? Fantastic. Because Heroes Talk has a Labor Day concert event planned at 72 Hannah Street, Staten Island, New York, Sunday, August 31st, 2008, starting at 11 a.m. with a live broadcast of Best in Show Radio. Then after that, we start rocking with Church of Man Love, myself, DJ Newstyle, featuring special guest Germ Freak, who will sing even if he's uncomfortable, Tryptophan, The Humans, Terrible Tim. Come on down, look at some weird people, and ignore the neighbors, because we don't care. We'll be loud, they'll hate us, it'll be fun. Thank you.
I implore you all, come down to this big party. There's plenty of people coming from out of state, all the way out of state. I happen to know for a fact that there are people coming all the way from New Jersey to this party. That's the New Jersey, by the way. Yeah, you guys should definitely come down to that. I mean, look, when are you ever going to get a chance to see DJ Newstyle work his musical magic on the island of Staten? This August. What other chance this August are you going to get to see that?
What's the last day of August? I guess you don't have a chance.
What's that?
Nothing.
Yeah, Labor Day weekend. Come down, do that. You can check out on our forum all the information that you need, or you can hit me up. And speaking of our forum, about a month ago, I started this thread about movies. Because there's a lot of classic movies people consider classics, that I haven't seen. Brian just sighed angrily at the fact that I... Dude, you are totally insane.
I'm sorry, no.
Something made you mad about movies?
I'm coming down off of my train high a little bit here, but I
you need drink.
Yeah, you're probably right. I saw a couple of movies that you didn't see, and it made me kind of a little like, oh.
Go ahead, talk about it.
Well, first of all, didn't you not see The Deer Hunter, for one thing?
I saw The Deer Hunter when I was very young, but I wouldn't consider it seeing it because I saw it on Channel 11 cut, and I was 7.
It's funny. I saw it the same exact way.
I remember the scene where Robert De Niro, instead of pulling the trigger in his mouth when they're forced to play Russian roulette, shoots the guy, which is one of the greatest scenes in cinematic history. But
wait, you know, let me put the brakes.
Honestly,
on.
That scene is why American Olympians are so arrogant, because we have the effing right to be.
Go Especially ahead. In China, is what you're saying.
Them freaking Chinese in that war.
But wait, let me put the brakes on this a little bit. Are you haven't seen Godfather? Is that real? Is that a bit? You haven't seen The Godfather.
May I throw something out there, just not in his defense, but kind of, I didn't see Godfather until about 2 years ago.
What the?
And this is why. Because growing up with the name Vito, all I heard all my life was, Vito. Hey, Vito Corleone, hey, Don Vito. And it's like, you know what? F this movie. I don't want to see it.
So, okay, so you had a reason. You did it.
Oh, yeah, no, Keith doesn't have a reason.
I didn't get my license until I was 21 because I was angry at my parents. They my mother and father split, and my mother, in sort of retribution, sold everything in that house for a very low price, including the car that my father and I worked on that was going to be mine when I was 16. So I didn't get a license with all intentions of being a big sort of F-off to my parents.
That's funny.
That's why you didn't watch The Godfather, because you had some sort of weird hang-up.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost excusable. It's not, but no, it's almost excusable. It's really, how do you
That's
not
why I don't drive. I'm getting back at my parents for splitting up.
How do you live this long and not see The Godfather?
Okay. Again, when I was a young kid, my parents would watch movies in the house on, you know, regular TV. We didn't have cable or anything. So I saw The Godfather Saga, which is the one that Francis Ford Coppola redid when they were filming Apocalypse Now.
They re-edited 1 and 2 together in chronological
order. Right, in chronological order. I saw that as a child.
I never saw that.
I had no idea what the Mafia was. I had no idea what anything was, so I don't count it as seeing that. About 5 years ago, I watched...
That's not true. You saw it. If you watched The Godfather Saga, you saw it. You shouldn't...
But at 7, 8 years old...
You should have seen it in its real kind of context, but The Godfather Saga, especially like on a Labor Day or something like that, it's good.
Keith,
it's acceptable.
Keith, when I was 6, I saw King Kong, the one with
Jessica Lange.
Jessica Lange and
I was in love with her.
Yeah, me too. But the thing is, I saw it. You know, like, just you can't discount a movie as something you didn't see because you were too young to comprehend it.
But I couldn't, like, I couldn't really tell you.
That's like saying you never watched Bugs Bunny until you were 21 because you finally got all the sexual innuendos. You know what I mean? It still counts that you saw it.
All right, I guess, but
no, because you need to see Godfather as an adult.
No,
or even a teenager.
No, you need to.
Yeah, you miss a lot. You miss a lot of it as an adult. You sit around and watch at it like intently. I can't imagine how much of that whole series and saga and the subtleties of the relationships between the characters is going to be lost in a 7-year-old. See it. What are you doing
and about,
on a radio show right now and not watching The Godfather?
So about 5 years ago, I saw The Godfather 2. For some reason, I watched that one, which I loved. I mean, I thought it was great.
Well, it's better than 1.
Is it?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I believe it or not, you know what the first one I saw was, not counting as a child? The Godfather 3. That's the one I saw. Nothing beats that one, honestly. Andy Garcia and Sofia Coppola.
Sofia Coppola.
So anyway,
I saw that
yeah.
in the theaters.
I started the thread basically like that by saying that Chris is always angry at the fact that I've never seen The Godfather.
It's ridiculous. I'm with Chris. It's ridiculous that you haven't seen The Godfather.
So people threw up, vomited up a bunch of movies that I should see, and Veal Chop, Eric, all of our friends. I think you threw some on there. Everyone came up with. You didn't. Maybe?
I never got around to it because
I thought you posted Tron.
I wanted to wait. I told Jay Carter to get off his ass and go see Tron. Which, by the way, if you haven't seen Tron, go get that movie. That, not nearly as important for you to don't bump that in front of The Godfather. By any means, but yeah, you'll really like that. And I mean, I wanted to wait for the fallout to kind of come and figure out and where fill in the blanks, but I just never got to filling in the blanks. But there were some amazing movies in there that I would also agree are classic American films that anyone who enjoys movies and American movies should have watched that already, and why you haven't seen it is beyond me. Like Network, for example.
I've never seen Network.
I've never seen Network.
You know what I know about Network?
I hate you all.
At the Met games in the late innings when they're losing,
right,
and they get guys on base, they'll show him stand up and say, "I want all of you to get out of your seats," whatever that big scene at the end of it is.
Yeah.
That's what I know of Network. So, yeah, there was a bunch of movies. Like, recently, about a year ago, I was taking a film class, and I saw Casablanca, because I had to see it for my class. Casablanca is a brilliant, brilliant movie. I always thought of Casablanca as this corny love story that I didn't want to see. I didn't realize that the love story is kind of on the back burner.
Totally.
And, you know, like, Casablanca is a great movie. So, when I saw that, and I thought it was great, I said, you know what, I should see some of these movies. So, that prompted me to make the suggestion that people tell me what I should see. So...
I don't think that they said Rear. I didn't see Rear Window on there, by the way. You should be.
Oh, I've seen Rear Window a bunch of times.
And my personal favorite would be Vertigo.
I've seen Vertigo as well. Okay. I love Vertigo. The original twist ending, isn't it, basically? Spoiler alert, spoiler alert.
And you've got Sunset Boulevard under your belt,
I've seen
right?
Sunset right, Boulevard okay. in a film class,
so,
actually.
So you've got enough.
See, that made sense to me with your Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Rosemary's Baby.
Rosemary's Baby. No, I mean, all of them. You know, like, they all seem. Sunset Boulevard seems to me as scary as Rosemary's Baby in some respects. Like,
Sunset Boulevard, really?
Oh my God, Gloria Swanson's a freak.
Yeah, but she's scary looking. She's not exactly scary.
Wait, is that her name in the movie, or is that...
No, that's the actress's name.
Oh, really?
Norma Desmond.
Norma Desmond, okay.
Brother.
Is William Holden in that?
I can't remember, I think so.
I don't think he's the writer. Is that what you're...
No, is he in the movie? William Holden, the actor.
Yeah, yeah, but the main character is a writer, and I was wondering if that is the...
Sorry.
I didn't see it. Writer, but...
Yeah, but...
right, I'm sorry to interrupt. What were you... You were going to finish...
No, so it's funny enough that you brought up The Godfather, because... I looked at the don't throw my bag out of the room.
Makes me so angry that you haven't seen that yet. We've had this conversation. You and Chris have had this conversation now 5 times.
You see,
get
man, I still
done with
watched
it. Go see the first movie. What's wrong with you? It's a great movie. You're really gonna like it. I promise you.
I always wondered. Man. I knew that Al Pacino is that's his biggest moment, and I know Al Pacino is always talked about as one of the greatest actors, but I never really understood why is Al Pacino considered such a great actor. Well, oddly enough, I did see Al Pacino in a movie now, and I needed some leads. I needed the good leads, and you guys gave me the good leads for what I should see, and I will say honestly that Al Pacino playing Ricky Roma in Glenn Ross is one of the greatest acting performances in history, and I gotta say, man, that movie is brilliant.
You finally saw Glengarry Glenn
Ross. I watched
Glengarry
Glenn Ross this week.
Awesome. And you think that Al Pacino's performance in there was the best out of all that?
I think it was a bunch of brilliant performances. Kevin Spacey didn't really do much until the end, but he was good at the end, I guess. He kind of, you know, he showed his chops, if you will. But
you liked Al Pacino selling the thing to the guy, the whole
thing.
I
think Al Pacino, from the beginning to the end, it was one of the, he was a jerk, but it was one of the most likable.
Who directed
characters.
That movie? I forget.
David Mamet, who also wrote the play.
The
David Mamet,
5 minutes that Alec Baldwin was on screen in that movie blew everybody else out of the water. As amazing as every one of those performances were, Baldwin was top notch. That was the best. I think my personal favorite.
And honestly, I think playing the neurotic maniac, Alan Arkin was brilliant as well.
Yeah, right? I mean, he is genius.
Ed Harris was great. I mean, the whole movie, when I sat there, I put it on, and I kind of knew I was going to like that movie because I love Boiler Room. That's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. This...
And I think they mention Glengarry Glenn Ross in Boiler Room,
wait,
right?
Boiler Room, the Ben Affleck movie?
Yeah. The Ben Affleck
okay,
movie.
I'm just making sure I know.
Because Ben Affleck basically
big
is
brass
Alec
balls,
Baldwin.
I think they say. And,
he
and
basically
this,
is yeah. And don't they reference they're, the always no, be closing thing?
They're
in,
watching
in the movie?
It. They're watching the movie.
They're watching Wall Street. In,
oh, you're right, you're right.
Because, all
right
but they keep running through quotes from different
right,
movies.
Right.
Basically, and, Boiler Room is Glengarry Glenn Ross and Wall Street. But the cool thing is instead of just ripping them off, they kind of acknowledge them in the movie. Like they acknowledge, like Vin Diesel sits there. And which disappointing, by the way, because Vin Diesel's great in that movie, and the fact that he didn't just become a normal actor instead of
yeah, that every other performance that you ever capture of him on screen sucks.
Him it at the end
is so disappointing. To
well,
me.
He was also in Saving Private Ryan, and he had an awesome death in that movie.
No, I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, but at the very last scene that Giovanni Ribisi and who I'm not that big a fan on, although I've been told that I sound like him on this show repeatedly, but Giovanni Ribisi and Vin Diesel, their last scene together, that is like a great acting performance. It's a realistic performance by Vin Diesel. But anyway,
dude, I love Boiler Room. It's great. I like how they edit in music into it. It's sort of like. They used a lot of like the hip hop style of editing to edit the audio into the video and just the editing. It's a great movie and it's like totally watchable and it's not a throwaway.
I didn't like that
classic
movie. I'd have to watch it again.
But aren't you a little angry now that it took you this long to see Glengarry Glen Ross? Like,
yes.
Aren't you that you missed out on all of this?
My father has been telling me for about 5 years that I have to watch that movie, and I wouldn't. That and The Big Lebowski were the two movies he was telling me I had to see. I finally watched The Big Lebowski, and that's what prompted me to post that thing, because when people tell me to watch a movie and I finally watch it, I don't think I've been disappointed yet. So, like, I basically, I guess if you know me and you know what I like, so to speak, but
But doesn't it make you angry that that it's taken this long?
It does, but it doesn't, because you know what? I was glad that I finally got to experience it, and you know what? Basically, like, it's kind of like, it's kind of like saving something. Like, this stuff I've saved. The last episode of the show Extras, which was one of my favorite shows, I saved the final episode for months because I said, this is the last thing I'm ever going to get. I want to still have something new of it to watch.
Is that the special, or is that the actual last episode?
That was the special. The okay. special.
I still haven't seen the last 5 minutes of it.
Really?
Yeah. I had to. Something was happening, and I had to leave, and I couldn't. And I
got to come to Best
of
the Show.
Like something was going on that I didn't get to see it, so I missed the end of it.
My
and
wife
that was the 2 hour long.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was great. It was, but you saw most of it. Him on Big Brother and all that stuff. But my wife and I still haven't watched the rest of season two of Dexter because we're still saving. Even though Dexter's going to come back, but
I haven't seen season two at all yet. But
we're still saving
missing,
the
like,
second half of it.
Too, yeah.
Because
yeah, but that's not The Godfather. Honestly, what are you doing?
Yeah, I wonder
not
what these
the
lists, what the list of movies are. Like, do you have a list or something? Or
well, I mean, we can go up on the forum if you want to. And
what's have you queued up? What's your plan now? What's your next one? What are you doing next?
The next one I'm going to watch. Well, I would have to actually
it
check out
be
the list.
The Godfather. I'm gonna choke you.
I have some. I have. I don't know if somebody put Anatomy of a Murder on the list, but I actually have that DVD in my house, and I haven't seen that yet. But I'll let everyone choose. I'll let you guys choose.
What's the choice? I don't have a computer in front of me, so I can't.
You're
really
saying
no? I mean the people on the forum.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, you know, it's a big interactive party thing that we got going on here. Vanessa's asking in the chat room if I've opened my Pretty in Pink DVD yet. I'm pretty sure this is dating back to our old show The Brown Lodge when I bought the Pretty in Pink DVD that I hadn't opened yet. I did open it. I watched it. It was I've seen Pretty in Pink probably almost as much as I've seen Rosemary's Baby because I'm a straight macho heterosexual male. But yeah, that was honestly the worst. They marketed it as the big alternate ending.
The What's Ducky edition or something?
Yeah, something like
or
that.
Everything's Ducky or something?
They marketed it as the big alternate ending, whereas, spoiler alert, if you've not seen Pretty in Pink, Molly Ringwald ends up going with Andrew McCarthy. She goes with him. They end up together instead of
But he
her
was such
and,
a jerk.
And no, he wasn't, though. Blaine wasn't a jerk.
No, that's Spader.
Rip, but he wasn't Rip, though. That was less than zero.
What's his name? Spader? James Spader.
I don't remember his name in
Blaine?
Pretty in Pink. No, Blaine was Andrew McCarthy.
Yeah. Oh, what?
But Andrew McCarthy wasn't a jerk.
Even yeah, when but he was. He was in the beginning, and he changed throughout the process of the movie.
I don't think he did. I'm going to have to disagree with you.
He started off being...
Tell me when he was a jerk.
He didn't have his own... When he was sitting and partying with, what is that, David Spader characters or whatever, he didn't have his
David
own
Spade,
spine.
Joe Dirt?
Yes. He didn't have his own spine, and he was doing whatever he did, and then he evolved through the process of the movie, and in the beginning, he was a jerk.
You know what
if you want to say he was a jerk because he didn't... Stefan, thank you, Vanessa. That was James Spader.
And he also blew her off for the prom or whatever as well. He had to be awakened to the fact that he was a jerk. He pulled that jerk and was, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
Dude, I don't think you saw Pretty in Pink. Okay, the first we see of him, he comes into the record store and he buys the Steve Allen record because he just comes in because he wants
yeah, but his
to
mother,
talk to her.
We're not his mother. She was calling him, and her mother wasn't allowing or was saying he's not here. It was clear that he was saying no, don't let me talk. And as the prom
he's
was
right.
approaching, so that he couldn't blow her off. Like he was a prick. He had to change in the middle of the movie.
Why have I seen this movie 1,000 times and I can't recall what he's talking
that?
About?
No, there's like
she confronted him
right.
at his locker. And that's when they got into
okay. I apologize. He was a bit of a jerk. You're right.
See, you know what's funny about that movie? Molly Ringwald has no choices. Because he's a little bit of a jerk. I'm convinced, after watching that movie, you know, 3 or 4 times in my entire life.
That's all you've seen it?
Yeah, you know.
Gay.
Speaking of, I'm convinced that Ducky's gay. Like, he's a closeted homosexual.
You mean the actor?
Yeah, no, no, no. Just
the character.
Just Ducky.
Vito brought this up once, and Chris got livid at him.
Yeah,
and
you're nuts.
Screamed and screamed at him. Was that? I think that was the Brown Lodge, right?
Yeah.
Screamed at you because you said that Ducky was gay.
I'm convinced because he treats women so like not Molly Ringwald. He treats her pretty like he puts her on a pedestal. And there's a part where he's in her bedroom when she's going to get him something to drink.
He says, "I love this girl. I
love
this girl."
You know, and like that's like, you know, that's not the part. I mean like. He'll walk by these girls in the hallway and go, "Hey, you guys want to, like, you know, lick each other or whatever?" I don't remember the name of the title, the quote. But
no, he says "I can arrange to have you both pregnant by the holidays."
Yeah, yeah, and it's just like, wow, what a dick! And it's like, wait a minute, this guy is totally like just compensating.
No, he's
overcompensating. He's totally.
I think he's
my God, jinx by me a coat.
I think he's overcompensating because he has no self-confidence.
That's what I was going to say, as a matter of fact. He's overcompensating for the fact that he's a nerd and that he has to come out and say outrageous stuff to not feel or look as nerdy. That's all it is. It's not that he's gay.
But
I'm not gay. Vito, stop saying it.
Even when Blaine, though, even when Ducky like gives Blaine a reason to act like a jerk, he's kind of cool about it, you know?
Who, Ducky or Blaine?
Blaine.
No, yeah, you're right.
Because Ducky's a prick to him, and he's kind of
yeah.
I don't know. I'm on. Maybe because Blaine is such a great guy when he's
He starts off as a weasel, and we see him go through cycles of being more or less weaselly until finally he straightens up. And it isn't until like towards the end when he actually straightens up. As he's courting her, everything is fine and dandy until he's actually threatened with the fact that his friends are going to see him with this trailer trash. And for that reason, he's a prick. Until the end, like when she comes in with that ugly dress and he accepts her for how ugly she is.
No, that shows her creative side, that dress. You know what's funny? Andrew McCarthy was... they filmed an original ending, and again, spoiler alert. Oh, that's what I was saying earlier. There was an alternate ending where she ends up with Ducky. And apparently they showed this to... they screened it to audiences, and the audiences were mad because the girls wanted her to be with Andrew McCarthy. So
of course.
They called Andrew McCarthy, who was in New York on Broadway, playing a soldier, had just shaved his head. And they made him come back to reshoot the new ending, which is actually the regular ending in the movie. And so Andrew McCarthy at the prom is wearing a wig. And
that's crazy.
Yeah, it's great. But I was mad about the DVD because they
said... Is it noticeable? Can you notice... If you know it and you're looking at it, can
If you know it, you'll totally see
it. I gotta see this.
Because you know what, man? It's not a very good wig.
I gotta watch this again. That's
great. It's a 1984 wig, basically. Or whatever year they filmed that.
They've made advancements in wig making.
Yeah, wigs have gotten better, although not as good as they should. But, yeah, that's the only reason I'm still bald right now. It's because I haven't found a wig that suits my standards.
What if we could get you that actual wig? Like Andrew McCarthy's wig from Pretty in Pink.
I will wear it to work every day.
I'll eBay it and we'll find it to you. You'll wear it to work every day.
I think you'll have to pay $1 billion for it, though, honestly. At least $1,000.
What if I got you a wig? Would you wear it to work, like, one day?
It's funny.
Is that day Halloween?
No.
I'm off every Halloween. I take that day off.
Just show up one day with a wig. It'll be a good wig. We'll get you a good wig. It'll look normal.
A guy came into my job, and he was this old guy. And he shaves his own head, obviously. I don't know why he does it, because he has a full head of hair on the top. But he buzzes his own head around, and it's all choppy and crazy. This dude's like maybe 70 years old. He's had his hair like this constantly. It's always different, because I think he just shaves it around the back and doesn't look at what he's doing.
Sure.
And when I saw this guy, it brought to my attention, I said to a girl I work with, what if all of a sudden one day I just came in wearing a wig? Do you think the majority of the people here would say anything to me, like, or would they? Obviously, you know what, I'm close enough with my coworkers where they would say, like, what the hell, probably, but, like, I don't know, like, I used to also think, what if my hair was slowly coming back? But not in a normal way. Like, what if all of a sudden I obviously was getting like plugs or something?
See, I've been thinking about this a little bit for the longest time. I've sort of worked in like the real world, and I had to be like a respectable engineer type thing. And for that reason, I'd have these wild sort of urges to dye my hair or like shave it off or do kind of crazy stuff. But
you want to stick it to the man.
I don't know. I just want to do it, but I'm afraid that I'd show up to work and I'd be kind of like, you know, as an engineer, particularly if you're seeing like customers or clients or whatever, and engineers are really kind of uptight people. They'd see me walk in with some freaky thing, and I just I didn't grow balls enough to do it. So, like, I stopped. And one time I quit, moved to the East Coast, and I dyed my hair black. And I actually had to go into the office and see the people with my head black. And
please dye your hair black. Please.
I liked it. I thought it was great. But
did you dye your eyebrows also?
Yes, I dyed my eyebrows black. I looked very much like Alec Baldwin. That's what it really started going through.
You're in love with that guy, aren't you?
I really wanted. I just wanted to do that. It's a pain in the ass to dye your hair. I never realized how much work it is because it grows out in a week.
It sounds funny, but I've done it. I've bleached my beard, you know, for like a Halloween costume and stuff. And it's funny though. Like
by Halloween costume, you mean a Saturday? Saturday at the club.
Yeah, you know.
And now I've got this urge to dye my hair gray or like an artificial type of silver. Yeah.
You're such an idiot.
I really want to dye it like even if it looks like totally fake, kind of shiny gray, like old
like
man
Cisco?
Gray.
Remember like Cisco?
No, I don't know what you're talking about. God.
Cisco is this bad hip-hop guy from like 10 years ago, maybe 5 years
Not
ago.
Not even, like maybe 10, jeez.
But I'm thinking like with the glasses and kind of my look, I might be able to pull it off, even though it would look a little sort of, it wouldn't look.
You should gray your temples and leave the top like.
See,
brown.
I don't want to frost it or anything. I'm thinking just full board.
No, who's
blank.
Frosting? I said gray it. You know, like gray the temples and like you know, like carry a pipe and like just.
See, I'm
like
thinking silver.
Just be Hugh Hefner, basically.
Yeah, totally.
I'm thinking like gray, like silver, like almost like a blue hair kind of thing going on. And then I dye my eyebrows and stuff like that. And I feel like I kind of can do it.
With me, as always, is my co-host Chris, our buddy, the Silver Fox, is sitting here.
I feel because now I'm an IT guy. My job isn't as quote serious as it ever was before, and I'm just like an IT goon in the closet. You know, I'm no longer
like
an engineer to having to talk to people. So I feel like, can I do this?
Here with the Silver Fox and our buddy Vito on the hottest of all lines. Who's this?
This is Brix Avalon calling in here.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Brix.
Good morning.
How you doing? I wanted to tell you about my, I've had several different hair approaches. Some of them have been, you know, dyeing my hair blue or green or orange, and this is all the time where I worked for the telephone company climbing telephone poles and being a residential installer and repairman, so I used to have to go into people's houses with all these different color hairs, and I dyed my goatee at the same time, too. I had this long little scraggly goatee that I would dye from color to color. So then, Brian, I wanted to say I tried so hard to dye my hair gray because I thought because I was such a young-looking dude that worked, you know, with a whole bunch of men at the phone company, that it would be hilarious to dye my hair and eyebrows gray. But I couldn't get it done. I couldn't figure out how to get the color combination. I asked a bunch of people to help me out dye my hair gray, and I just couldn't get it to work. So instead of doing that because I realized I couldn't do it, what I did was I shaved out the middle of my head like Mr. Burns on The Simpsons.
Oh, no.
And I had the old man donut ring around my head, and then I would go into people's houses like that. So I had this big amount of hair going around my head like, I was a 22-year-old kid, and I had the middle shaved out with a Bic razor.
See, I'm not necessarily going for the old look. If I happen to dye it and it makes me look like it's genuine gray hair, I'll live with it. But I'm kind of going for like the steel gray, like a robot punk or something. I don't even know what I'm going for, but I just wanted to totally artificial, you know, whitish, grayish, silver kind of shiny hair. And
yeah,
I'm
the best way to do that is every day. This will get both things going for you. You get the spray on, like the Halloween costume stuff, so you can wear it whenever you want, and then you don't have to wear it at work. You could just wash it out, and then you don't have to deal with it.
I suppose.
You spray your eyebrows and your head.
See, that's what I was going to say about your job. Like, you can kind of pull that off because, first of all, like, this is why I feel I can do it, because I'm a little bit of a rugrat now. Like, as an IT guy, I can dress a lot worse than the rest of the people in the office because I'm crawling under desks, I'm pulling cable, I'm doing all this stuff. And if you're a phone guy, you don't have to necessarily dress respectfully, even if you're going into their homes and stuff like that. And on top of that, you're not going into the same home twice. They don't. The guy that you're going into doesn't know if, this guy usually has black hair, but now he's got blonde hair. What kind of a freak is he?
That's a good point. Good point. But with the dress-up thing, I also used to push the limits, too. And one day I wore a three-piece suit and a fedora to work for the phone company. I was climbing up poles and people on the street were looking up the pole, seeing a guy with a three-piece suit on. That was one of my favorite times of the job.
That's awesome. Like, if it was raining really hard, too, and you're, like, shaking it off up there, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to share my head. And I also, one day, I shaved one side of the head and left the other hair on. So I had, like, a... To the left was all hair, and to the right was big bald.
That's just ridiculous.
Hey, Bricks, what did your family think about this?
Say that again?
What did your family think about this head-shaving bit?
What did my family think of? I think by the time I was 15, my family knew where I was at and that they weren't going to be able to stop things. So I guess they've always known, like, he's that guy in the family. You know, he's that guy.
They just, like, accepted it and, like, kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think so. I think I had a string of crazy uncles, and my father was a little bit nutty as well, so they'd already done some ridiculous stuff throughout their lives, but none of it was, they were just neighborhood guys from Brooklyn, you know, like, none of them had ever, like, gone through the punk and hardcore scene, so I just had their personality kind of ridiculousness, and then it I was able to express it also and take it to a whole new level. So it's kind of like, yeah, I think that they all saw a little bit of themselves in me, but they and then they enjoyed. And then I guess I don't really know. I can't explain that. I'll have to call up my mom and ask her.
Well, you probably looked like you were from Mars to them because, like, they didn't understand or appreciate the whole punk thing and the changing and the fashion of it, right?
Yeah. Like one night I used to have a big bald head, and one night I came home. I was at the Continental one night, and a TV, someone was like floating and jumped up and grabbed the TV hanging off the side of the wall, you know, like on the arm bar that they hold. They project the TVs in the air.
Yeah.
Somebody grabbed it, and it fell off and hit me on the head. So I'm out of shot. I think it was a Black Train Jackson. I'm in a Black Train Jackson. Someone pulls it down, and the TV falls on my head. And I have this huge gash in the top of my head. And I go, you know, my mom didn't really like me having a big bald head anyway. So she wakes me up in the morning. She's like, what the hell happened to your head? Because I had just a huge gash in it. And the whole family was like, that was one thing that kind of set the family off. But other stuff, like looking weird, like, you know, piercings and tattoos and stuff, they were just like, whatever.
See, you know what's funny? Wait a minute. Like... You brought something up that your mom didn't like you having a shaved head.
Yeah.
My grandmother was the same way. Like, I never shaved my head when I was in high school. I just would get my hair cut really short before football season. And she would always threaten to kick me out of the house. Is that like an older person thing? That they just thought that... I don't know.
Well, I don't know. We'll have to ask... Because I shaved my head a little bit, you know, later in the game. We'll have to ask the people who actually, you know... Like, a lot of our friends, you know, were skins early on, so we'll have to ask them how they were treated, because they actually shaved their heads when it was, like, you know, like, it wasn't even acceptable in the punk scene. It was just skin or punk, you know. I shaved my head a little bit when, like, straight-edge kids were shaving their heads, you know, but we'll have to ask the kids, like, earlier on if they really got, like, lashbacks from their parents and stuff like that.
Maybe they were survivors.
I got to tell you, there was a time in the 90s when I got very enamored with the whole skinhead scene, you know. And let me clarify for those not in the know, I'm not talking about Nazis. I'm talking about, you know, the regular plain old I don't hate anybody except for, you know, just everybody skinhead scene. And I used to shave my head and, you know, wear the braces and the Fred Perry's and the what the hell is a jacket? The flight jacket.
Yeah, but you have to understand from many people's perspective that means that you're being racist.
That's exactly where I'm going with this. I used to work for this law firm, and sometimes I would be like, you know, normally for the majority of the time I wouldn't dress like that. But one day there was this dude in the courthouse that I was in, and I'm wearing a flight jacket and my head is shaved, and this dude just turns around and he's staring at me. So I, like, nodded at him, you know, because I'm not even thinking anything. And I turn back and he's staring at me. So I'm just like, what's up? And he's like, how can you live with yourself? And he walks down the stairs. And granted, you know what, man? At the time, I was like, what a jerk. He doesn't even know what he's talking about. But, you know, like, and now in retrospect, it's like, you know what? People know what they know. And you know, like, I don't know. That's my story.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like that's... There is a part of me that's stopping. I want to do the silver hair kind of thing, But I am a little concerned about how it's going to float at work.
You don't want to look like one of them silver-haired serial killers.
No, I mean what it means is now I'm a
Were you going to say a thug?
No, I'm a 38-year-old kid dyeing my hair, and it's kind of like, and I'm doing it not because like, ooh, I want to hide the gray. I'm doing it because I'm a freak,
and
so I'm going to be like the freak at work. And not only that, now like you know my girlfriend's parents and like all their friends and stuff. I'm kind of like. I guess I'm whiny. I'm being a little bit of a bitch about it.
Let me say,
do it, man. Do it.
Are you
do your hair gray?
Are you whining because you're too old to do it? Like
I feel like I'm too old that it's unacceptable to do it, and for that reason, I should just freaking do it. What's wrong with me?
What's today's date? August 10th, 2008. It is now about 1:36. Brian, you just had your midlife crisis.
I've been juggling. I've had my midlife crisis at like 22. Jeez. I mean, when I was at work and desperately wanting to do this, I wasn't able to. And now I feel like I'm able to finally, but I'm way too old.
You should ask one of the people that you work with to actually dye it at work.
Or maybe just like go into the bathroom and come out and it's dyed like I aged in there.
Oh, this job is stressing me out.
Yeah, change your outfit too. That would be awesome.
So now he's just a different person. Yeah, when he comes out of
bed. Brian from the future just walked out of the bathroom.
Look at an afro. Like now you look face. Like, I've come out of a totally different guy. I got boobs.
Like now you look like what the hell's that actor's name? The guy from Frasier. The dad.
Oh, John Mahoney.
John Mahoney.
See, that would be great hair. That's what I'm looking for.
See,
that's
cool,
what
man.
I'm going for.
I think you should do it.
That would look good, wouldn't it?
Nah, it would look great. Well, I'm going to leave you guys alone, man, and keep listening. I'll talk to you soon.
See you, Bricks.
Thanks, Bricks.
All right, later.
Bricks calling in. How about that?
Love Bricks.
So you got anything else to say about that?
Yeah, let me just say in retrospect, when I look back on me being a dude that got into scenes, you know, like dude that got into the skinhead scene and the mod scene, I just want to slap the S out of myself.
So you know what's funny?
And I still respect those original scenes, you know, like I still respect the idea of them, but like being like a retro guy, like I honestly hate myself so much for that.
Again, Chris and I actually got into this. I wish he was on the phone right now, but Chris and I got into a conversation last night about being a hipster. What does it mean to be a hipster? And we both know what it is.
You live in Williamsburg.
Right. Well, I think his description was, you moved from Ohio to Williamsburg. And we both know what it is, because how it had come up was that we were talking about the way I dress. And he goes, you're such a hipster with the way you dress. I said, wait, I wear T-shirts and jeans. How am I a hipster?
I think though, you know what it is? I guess, all right, I think we've discussed hipsters in the past, and I think we have one on our show.
I was going to say we both agree that Brian was a hipster.
Even though Brian's a little different, because Brian's a violent maniac that probably hates hipsters. Do you hate hipsters, Brian?
Just because it's a group of people, yeah. I mean, I guess I do hate
just
hipsters.
Just because they're humans.
Yeah, kind of, but I totally acknowledge that. The thing that makes me angry about this is that all five of us, arguably, Rob Giggs is the only person in this room who can say that he's not a hipster. And if Chris was here, he'd be lumped in with us too. You are a freaking hipster.
Based on what though? That's what we're trying to determine.
Because of your obsession with pop culture, because your knowledge of stupid hipster music that everyone goes, because you're going to go to some concert and see some hipster crap because of the stupid hipster movies and TV shows that you watch. We're all freaking hipsters.
And
to reject that, I don't know.
That's the interesting thing. See, all right, this is what I hate. This is what I hate about hip. Well, first of all, I hate everybody.
I hate the hipsters who get all up and like, oh, hipsters are ruining this thing. You're a freaking hipster, ruining it.
I hate when you go into. All right, here's what I do. Dealing with going to like clubs in New York City. And the clubs I used to go to weren't like a hip hop club or a techno club or anything, but like going to like clubs that maybe played like, you know, Britpop music and hipster clubs, basically, you know, like all throughout the late 90s and stuff. I would come across people that would say use the term like bridge and tunnel crowd.
Right.
And I would get livid at somebody moving here from Minnesota and referring to someone as a bridge and tunneler. You know,
right.
It's just like, you're a freaking, what are you, so you're like a United Airlineser, I guess, you know? Like,
what I love is you're in Brooklyn, you're hanging out with people who are in Brooklyn, and they'll start talking about the bridge and tunnel crowd.
Yeah.
You're in friggin' Brooklyn.
Yeah, so they don't even know what it means. Like, those people have no clue what it even means. Like, they don't know how they get to Manhattan, basically. Like,
underwater on a bridge. On a train.
Another great scene in Boiler Room, by the way. When the guy refers to them as bridge and... Are they looking to get lucky with the bridge and tunnelers tonight? But, so there was that. And then there's the idea of, like, the people in Williamsburg now... There's a lot of forums out there revolving around Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And you will see people talking about how all these new people moving in are ruining the neighborhood. And I just think it's the funniest thing in the world because, like... There's people that have basically been picked up and relocated out of Williamsburg because they can't afford to pay the prices that all these Midwesterners are coming to pay now. But these people are complaining about, you know, the neighborhood changing.
Right, and they have changed the neighborhood in doing so. That's the essence of my complaint about hipsters complaining about hipsters. I can understand how irritating a hipster can be, even if I count myself amongst them as a hipster. No one has balls enough to. For some reason, the hipster is the hugest population in Williamsburg. Not one of them will admit that they're a freaking hipster.
Exactly.
So but I'm here to admit that I'm a freaking hipster. All right, I don't like it, but I've seen all the cool movies. I have all the cool music. I know how to talk the talk. I can talk the lingo. I've fallen out of favor of it. I've lost a lot of it, and I hate that fact. And I know.
Are you going to Tarjay later?
Exactly. That's what I mean.
But that's the thing. Like, all right, so when it comes down
You were in a skinhead scene. You were in a band. You are in a band. You're a friggin' hipster.
But, all right, that's the thing, though. Like, if you're going to put me down in a room, and you know what, man? I honestly got to say, I could get along with anyone, pretty much. If you're going to put me down in a room with a guy that might be called a Guido and a guy that might be called a hipster, I may hate them both for what they're part of, but I could probably sit with the hipster for hours and talk about Cloverfield to David Lynch to everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's a beautiful day here in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. I'm Greg Berman.
I'm Neil Tafoya. And the hipsters are out in full force today to see which one of their own will take the prize at this year's Hipster Olympics.
Brought to you by Pabst Blue Ribbon. When you aim for authenticity, aim
hipster
for
Pabst. Hipster Olympics.
Contestants have been training year-round inside loft buildings and dive bars all over New York City.
And today is their big day.
Of course, no self-respecting hipster would ever enter this contest, let alone admit to being a hipster in the first place. So we're forced to assume that our contestants' participation is strictly ironic.
See, I mean,
and referee Wally Masters is giving the contenders a once-over.
Now, he's checking that each contestant is adequately hungover, looking for bags
this
under
is
the
my,
eyes.
Wait, pause this thing. This is
the smell of alcohol.
Vito, I think, was the one who kind of threw this in the forum not too recently.
The old forum, yeah.
But this is like a sort of viral thing that went around. I think there's like a comedy troupe or something that assembled this thing and put it out there. And it's pretty funny because it's poking fact at the sort of like self-importance, all the not. But you can tell by the level of detail that they leave. Like when they start going in this section, they start going through each of the hipsters and they look at their influences.
Right.
And one of them is like neck face. This is made by hipsters criticizing hipsters. And that's what makes me angry.
Well, you know what, Brian? Brian recently, Patton Oswalt had a great bit on hipsters. Talking about how
he himself is King Hipster.
And that's basically what you told me. He is a hipster. And the only thing I know of Patton Oswalt is the King of Queens. I love that show, and I know him on that as Spence. That's all I know of him.
I have a comedy album of his downstairs.
And he did this bit on hipsters where he's talking about how basically the hipster uniform is anything that sucks, like a Care Bear shirt or something, you know. Like, but then Brian, you told me that you got all mad just like he did just now, saying that he's a hipster making fun of hipsters. You know what's interesting? My brother just recently moved from Staten Island to Woodside, Queens, and Woodside is slowly being overrun by hipsters, and
Before you go any further, isn't it funny that we're talking about this as if it's gentrification?
What do you mean?
As if like they're
taking
over. But meanwhile, it's.
Oh, could you mean because hipster's not a race?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could be black or Chinese or something. Yeah, I can be a hipster. Like,
yeah, but I understand where you're going. The connotation is white. I mean, that's from the perspective of the neighborhoods that the hipsters are ruining. From the people who are in the neighborhoods, it's white people are moving in and taking our neighborhood away from, you know.
And meanwhile, the hipsters
who
are getting upset that other people are moving into their neighborhoods.
Because if you're a hipster, you want to be in the place when it's dangerous. You don't want to be around like other hipsters. You want to be hip. You want to be before the rest of the hipsters.
You guys were talking about this a couple weeks ago about stuff that you like that you don't want other people to like. And it's kind of like, that's a hipster mentality right there, isn't it? Like, whenever you are like, well, I discovered, what's the name of the band? Any band, you know, I discovered this band, you know, way before you did. It's like, wait, you know, like, who cares? Like, but
I've known a lot of hipsters. I've known a lot of hipsters in my time. I've probably even been, a lot of my friends have been hipsters. And maybe even some of my best friends in the past. And it got me wondering this week. Have you ever been best friends? And I'm not talking about your significant other or your wife or whatever. Have you ever been... All right, and I know it's quote, gay, you know, in a non-homosexual way, just a lame way to call someone a best friend as an adult. But you do have people that you would consider a best friend, even though you may not say it.
Sure.
But have you ever been best friends with a girl?
Yes.
You have. Brian?
Yeah. I was really, really young, but yes.
What do you mean by really, really young?
I was best friends with two girls. I had my first sexual experience with both of them at the same time when I was three. And I knew them throughout much of my formative teenage years.
Okay. I assume you know we're going back now, right?
Yeah, I figured that's as much.
What did a sexual experience at three consist of?
We had a game that we called Touch that would basically... Okay, these best friends were basically... They were... My parents were hippies, and their friends were hippies, so we hung out. We had, like, three families that went and do hippie things together. They basically just got high all the time. And then I was with the two other kids that were my age, the two girls. So from a very, very early age, we were kind of, like, hanging out, and we looking back at it now, it clearly was, like, sexual experimentation. It was the furthest thing from my mind when it was happening, but I was a baby, and we were playing touch. Pretty much, but it was like, okay, it's my turn to touch you, and I get to decide where to touch you, and then, like, I do that, and then it's like, and they can't do anything. They can't, like, say anything or kind of, like, move their hands or push you away. And then it was, you know, okay, now it's your turn to touch me, and they tell you, like, you know, where you're going to be touched and all that stuff. And it was very, it was sexy. And the weirdest thing was, okay, we grew up together. We were kind of, and this all happened before, like, puberty for me, clearly. And this family moved away when they were, like, 10 or 11 years old or something like that. They went to San Diego. And the other family, soon thereafter, almost on their heels or on their haunches, went to New Mexico, I think Albuquerque or something like that. So they went to the left coast, and then I started, like, becoming a man and, like, fooling around and like, all this kind of sexy stuff was happening to me. Years later... I mean, like, I'm flooded with hormones at this point. We all, the three families, got together for, like, a camping trip, and we're out in the middle of the woods, and, like, it was me and the two girls, and we were, they were looking very good.
How old are you now at this point?
I'm maybe 16 or 17 years old, and these girls are like that, and they're like, they're walking around in their bikinis, and they're jumping. It was something out of a freaking movie. And, like, one of them is doing, like, sexy strip dancing and kind of, like, taking her clothes off in front of me. And I was – it was, like – I couldn't work it into conversation how to go back and, like, did you want to play touch again or something? But it was the only thing that was on my head. I wanted to play touch with these girls.
By the way, Starbucks double shot in the Ustream chat room. Jimmy Spickle says, you know he has a rod talking about touching a three-year-old even though it's an old story. And our buddy Equinox, are you sure this is two girls and not a drunk uncle? Let me ask you something. Look, I don't want to be shock jock,
yeah.
But honestly, did you put your finger in the girl's back door?
No, but I will say, looking back on it, it looks.
You wish you had.
It says a lot about me. Is I always wanted to touch the back, and they always wanted to touch the front.
See, I'm amazed.
I'm a butt man. I like the butts. I like a booty. So, and from this perspective, it didn't dawn on me until it figured. Like, I'm always like turn over, and they're always telling me that I need to be up front.
Can I ask you a question? Is your 38-year-old self jealous of your 3-year-old self for getting so much action?
I'm telling you, these girls, especially in their teenage, they are hot. They were hot girls. They're probably, I mean, they both were.
Now they're old now.
One of them ended up becoming like a stripper or something. Both got like knocked up young and have kids and stuff. But they're really, they're beautiful, like traditionally attractive, kind of sexy girls. And it was tough being a 16-year-old geek looking like I did, like flooded with acne and not being able to deal with like women at a very.
Like Brian being geekier is honestly the most amazing thought.
Yeah. But I wish I was smart enough to be able to work in another game of touch because I'm sure they would have been all for it.
You know what?
So meek.
And Jimmy is pointing out in the chat room, one became, well, you know, they ended up where they were because of you playing the touch game.
It was just their butts. They touched me more aggressively than I touched them. So no, I didn't poke them in the.
What do you mean?
The top one.
What do you mean?
I would just like touch their butts. I would like would you rub use a, their booties.
Would you use a finger or the whole hand?
The whole hand. The whole both hands. Are you kidding me?
See, and Vanessa's saying in the chat room that this is a normal kid stuff. I had one experience like that as a child. My friend Gabriella, who was a girl that lived in the same project that I did, and our parents were close friends.
Was this in Canarsie?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
sort of. Yeah, East Flatbush, Canarsie. But She one day me and her were probably maybe 7 years old, and we were in my grandmother's house, and we were in the back bedroom for whatever reason, and we decided to start showing our butts to each other. And I remember
how old are you?
Seven, maybe.
Exactly. But did it even seem at the time sexual to you? And it's yeah, obviously
I wanted to
ram
that thing.
Really?
No, yeah, probably not. I mean, but honestly, thinking back. Yeah, but then I remember my grandmother walking into the room and yelling at us, "What are you doing?"
Oh, did you see her butt?
Mooning each other.
My grandmother didn't show us her butt. I gotta find that girl.
That's what it was like. That's what it was like when I got to see them both camping again. It was both of them, too. It wasn't just one of them. I was like, oh, they're both there. Oh. It was
wait, and your parents were all involved in like a hippie commune with them or something?
Not a hippie commune, but they all hung out. They weren't commune people. They were like motorcycle hippies. So they all just went to each other's houses and got high.
Do you think your parents might have been involved in like a key party with those people?
I moved to San Diego as an adult after college and stuff like that, and got back in touch with that family. They were still living in San Diego. And it was funny, around drinks one time I was talking to the father, and he was like, "You know, for all I know, you could be one of my love childs."
Oh, my God.
It was a funny joke how he put it in context. It was pretty hilarious. But no, no.
You might have punched the wrong guy.
It's pretty clear when you look at us. I punched the right one.
Oh, that's uncomfortable.
Sorry.
I was drinking.
I guess my question was, can you remember from the perspective? I remember from the perspective of a 3-year-old and well on through my early childhood that this was not sexual. It's something that I enjoyed. It's something that I liked to do.
But isn't that sexual?
I didn't know what sex meant.
I
had no freaking clue. And it was something that I liked to do. I don't know if I got an erection or anything like that.
That brings me to an interesting point. Let me ask. The interesting point that I have is on the hottest of all lines. Who's this?
It's Vanessa.
Hey, you back?
I'm back. You're talking about playing doctor, so I figured I
touch.
Should call
touch,
in.
Touch, Vanessa. Touch. You want to play touch?
Yeah. I played a lot of touch as a little kid.
Okay.
There's a lot of touch. I played a lot of touch. It was introduced to me. And then I became the one who introduced it to everyone else.
What do you mean by little kid? What age-ish?
Okay, so, like 3 to 4 years old,
okay,
I remember another little girl specifically telling me, saying, "Hey, you wanna play something?" And I was like, "What?" She goes, "Does the lock on the bathroom in your house have, I mean, does the door on the bathroom in your house have a lock?" I was like, yes. And she goes, "Okay." So we go in the bathroom, and she knew we needed to lock the door and make sure no parents could come in. And she was like, "Here's what you do. You, you take your finger or you take something else and you put it right here and it feels good."
What? I mean, you are you saying at 3 years old you're diddling around with penetration?
No, it was it wasn't penetration. It was like
all exterior work.
Yeah, I mean, the right way to do it. Like, diddling yourself.
All right, well, was this person also 3 years old? Because she
Yeah, we were the same age.
How the hell did she know about that?
I don't know. I don't know. She didn't tell me how she knew, but... So,
Vanessa, would you say this maybe have started the whole, like, women in your life thing, starting at
all of my little kid touch game experiences were all with other little girls.
So, well, I guess that lays... You see, I always felt weird that it was happening so young to me, looking back at it. It didn't feel weird when it was happening. But, you know, I tell a story like this, or I think about it, and it was like, this is a little... too kind of young for this to be happening.
What's the rule? Am I allowed to be aroused or no?
But, I mean, that's how I sort of have justified it in my head, that it didn't really kind of feel sexual. It felt good, but I didn't know what sex was.
And that was my point. Like,
but we didn't know what sex was either. She was just telling me something that felt good. You know, like, it wasn't... And we didn't touch each other at that point.
Oh, you just touched...
You guys
touched,
are breathing hard.
What you're saying is you guys just touched yourself.
She said, I touch myself like this, and she showed me how to do it.
Oh, see, I was
but
actually
this is,
touching.
This is the thing.
Well, it moved on. That was the first experience, you know. Like then,
go on.
From then on, there were all kinds of other experiences with other people.
Can you fast forward, like, 15 years and tell us one?
Did you show this game to other girls yourself? Or? Okay.
I didn't show it as graphically as she did.
Did you make up new rules?
I definitely introduced some other people to the game, and I remember being like first grade ish, and a girl that I was in school with, we had like a pretend you're with your boyfriend game, but like we didn't have boyfriends.
Wait,
like we didn't know.
What
we didn't know anything
mean?
About it. It was an excuse to like do things to each other that we were like, "Oh, what would you do if you were with your boyfriend?" Well, if I was with my boyfriend, I would, you know, I would touch him like this, and it just escalated into like, you know, us completely like rolling around on each other.
Interestingly enough, I recently got into a little bit of trouble at work because I tried to play that game with a coworker.
But Vanessa, if you're talking about what would you do with your boyfriend, what about the apparatus itself? Were you bringing anything as far as into play with, you know, it's not what would you do with your girlfriend, what would you do to your boyfriend?
Yeah, I think that was just the way that I don't think either of us knew the difference of what was going on in somebody else's pants of the other gender. You know, it wasn't like that. It was just you had to talk about it as if it was with a boyfriend in order to make it acceptable.
Yeah, I still don't know what's going on in the other gender's pants, by the way.
You know what? I'm just going to shut up.
You know what's funny, though? Like, Brian, as you said, you know, about not knowing what you're, you know, and not being sexual, think back to your earliest masturbation moments. Was it sexual or was it physical? Was it like kind of getting high? Was it like, because I remember, you know, like I remember just
Keith, I'm sorry, why is it always like getting back to kind of getting high?
Yeah,
you know, like the typical person's like, you know, gonna be with you on this one.
It's kind of like that moment when the blood draws back into the needle and
well, that's the essence. That's why heroin is so addictive, and that's particularly heroin or any kind of like opiate. Is that it follows the same sort of brain patterns as orgasms and such.
As Equinox is telling us, it hits the same center in the brain. But it's kind of like it was purely for physical pleasure. And then all of a sudden, when you reach a certain age, or at least myself, when you reach a certain age, when you notice the connection of, wait, naked girls and doing that, like that's when you first realize.
Is that 32?
No, I'll let you know when I get there, I'm saying. But yeah, that's what I think. I don't think little kids understand about sex.
I remember.
You know, like, I mean, obviously Jimmy Spickle does because he was banging women at seven. But the rest of us.
From my perspective, it was only in retrospect that I look back at it and realize what I was missing out on. Like from my teenage years, I would be like, "What did I screw up there?" Like I was. I know it was only from like 3 to 10, but really, I missed out on an opportunity. What's wrong with
the ones that got away?
Exactly.
Yeah, my like it's funny because like you're saying, what was your first masturbatory experience.
Oh,
but
boy,
like,
this is going to get really creepy.
No, not at all. Like, I just remember seeing Elvira on Real People. And it's like, and like the trigger between seeing her walking around with her boobs bouncing and just getting an erection, that was like the, like, that was like, that's the connection right there. It's like, oh, there it is.
Boobs.
Yeah, totally.
You know what's funny? Recently, my wife called me from, she was waiting to get a manicure, and she tells me that there's this lady that looks just like Elvira. And I responded to her, oh, she's a vampire? And my wife's text message back to me is, Elvira's a vampire. I love you, baby.
Well, I think to clarify, for me, even though I was kind of an early bloomer with the experiencing my own body kind of thing, it wasn't sexual though, and it had nothing to do. It was all about just my body and pleasure. It didn't have to do with anything that I wanted anyone else to be involved in.
Yeah, but when you look back at your, for lack of a better term, sexual awakening, would you look back at that experience as being integral to that?
Can she though?
I don't know. Maybe it laid the foundation for liking girl parts.
Well, I mean, Brian. It seems like Brian's saying that like he was always trying to get that game going again. So yeah, that might have been like when he was sexually awakened. He might have seen that as that was the first experience. I don't know. Like Brian's also not answering right now, so I'm not sure. But
I am not sexually awake.
I mean, sexual experience at an early age, I think, is about your body as opposed to later on, it's about someone else's body. You know, because even if you're doing it to yourself, you're obviously in your head is a thought of someone else's body. You know, unless you're thinking of like, you know, killing someone. But even then, it involves someone else's body.
You know what I wonder? And I'm kind of taking advantage of Vanessa being on the phone because there's a woman present. But I imagine for guys, you masturbate before you have sex more often than the other way around. Like, you have sex before you masturbate.
Wait, what do you mean? I don't understand what you mean.
Your first, you know...
He's trying to stretch out the experience.
No, the first orgasm probably comes from, like, you masturbating other than you having sexual encounters with a woman or something.
Oh, I thought you meant every sexual encounter.
Oh, no.
You're masturbating before.
So I'm wondering, like, is it the same for women? Like, do they masturbate before they have sex, or is it, like, the sex part happens?
Oh, so basically, what do girls think of when they're masturbating?
No.
He's saying the first time a man has an orgasm, he's traditionally probably masturbating.
Right.
Is that really happening for women, or do women not masturbate, and are they introduced through sex by some creepy uncle?
Yeah, and then, like, they learn masturbation later. Like, you know, like, that's Vanessa, do you have any insight on that? I don't mean to be personal. I just, you know, just...
His hands are
in
his pants.
I think in my experience with talking to other women, a lot of times, no, they did not masturbate before they started having sex. And it's a problem because it makes it to where they really have no idea how to get to that first orgasmic place with a guy because they don't know how it works.
Right.
It really is more not to make the sex talk, but it really is more complicated for a girl. I actually dated a girl that had never masturbated before, and
you probably dated more than one when you think about it.
And I think the reason, and I believed her because it was kind of like she was almost embarrassed by the fact, you know, like . You know, so but it
she
was
should be. It's
thing.
Filthy.
She'd be embarrassed that she didn't do it.
She'd be embarrassed by sex. Sex is filthy. It's dirty. It's not.
Well,
right.
I told her to be embarrassed that she had boobs. I mean,
well, obviously, she'd try to tape them back or something.
Ew, lumpy.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. I'm gonna go play a game of touch by myself.
Riling up the room as usual.
Really?
She had to hang up.
Well,
oh my God, so young. So young
all.
When these kids start. Hey everybody, thanks for joining us today. Check us out, bestinshowradio.com. More importantly, hearustalk.com. DJ New Style live Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Thank you everyone, Bricks, Vanessa for calling in, everyone in the chat room. Thanks, Chris, for abandoning us.
Vito, thank you, Vito, for showing up and having fun.
Thank you, Vito, I'm sorry. I apologize, Vito.
I'm only downstairs, I'm a call away.
Cocky socks, steamroller, roll over your face. Let's chase the dragon home, everybody. We're all so young.